It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We're going to do a special podcast without interruption by commercials, you know, and we're going to do a double here. We're going to have Virgil Vaduva on from GetSell411.com. We weren't able to get him during the show, but I wanted to get him on the same day today because I know people live, they want to make sure they get some Ron Paul. And then we're going to have Brian Sovereign. I'm going to be talking about a lot of different security issues and so on online. And certainly, if it was at all possible, get Virgil Vaduva on from GetSell411.com. And he made himself available after he had some emergency meetings. Everything okay, Virgil? You guys got it going on?
Everything is great, and thanks for having me, Ernie. I apologize for the mix-up earlier. There are things that are beyond my control. But here we are, so sorry about that.
Well, this is the one thing that I definitely wanted to get into. Let's go ahead and talk about Cell 411. There are other apps that were similar. There was a lot of promises. A lot of people, especially younger people, they don't understand just how fast applications and access to computing power with just a smartphone is relatively new. And as time has gone on since 2009, I remember we started doing our first apps, and then all of a sudden, boom, 4, 5, 6 years, stuff's happened. There's more stuff coming, and Cell 411 offered a lot of opportunities, but you have a new feature coming on with ride sharing, or however you want to call it. But first, let's start off with Cell 411, introduce everybody to it, where to go to get it, how they downloaded, web pages, what's your mission, save the planet, go.
Well, that's a lot, but let me see if I can handle all that. So Cell 411 is basically a mobile app that we started developing about a year ago. And the idea was that basically, and coming from you know, the liberty movement and the liberty mindset, my goal has been from the very beginning to build a platform that allows users to get the state out of their lives when it comes to emergencies, because right now the state has a monopoly on emergency response. So if you need help in an emergency, Ernie, all Americans know you have to call 911. That's a national system. If you get in a car wreck, or if someone assaults you, or if you have a heart attack, that's really, you know, you cannot avoid the possibility of getting the government involved. And that is completely, it goes completely against this original idea of America being a nation of independent, self-reliant human beings, don't you think? So basically, we are trying to build a platform, and we did build a platform that is encouraging users to address emergencies in a way that does not involve the state, it does not involve cops, it doesn't involve, or at least involves the state as little as possible, and it promotes, you know, self-reliance, independence, you know, and personal responsibility. So that's what the core idea of Cell 411 was.
Now your personal motivation, we'll get into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
But your personal motivation is kind of your, you know, libertarian security professional, you know, journalist, photographer, you know, kind of liberty movement guy. But you spent most of your life in communist Romania and participated in the 89 street protest that led to Ceausescu getting a bullet. You know, I mean, literally. And
I did.
You know, and your motivation for doing this kind of thing was, we don't want to go down that road or try to avoid that road, or what's that road?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, having spent, you know, half of my life in a communist country, Ernie, it's kind of hard, you know, you become wired with this, you know, revulsion, you know, against socialism and communism. You just can't stand it anymore. And when I came here to this country about 20 years ago, you know, I've noticed a very troubling tendencies that Americans have. You know, human beings tend to forget things very quickly, even bad things, and I see a lot of Americans ready to embrace socialism and communism wholesale, and that's really disturbing. So I'm hoping Cell401, this mobile app, this mobile platform we've developed, is kind of, you know, it's both an educational tool to teach people about self-reliance, but it's also an actual tangible app that can literally save lives. So it really, you know, it ties into my history for sure, and I think we've done pretty well so far, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, without giving props where they're not due, or, you know, competition or whatever, Peacekeeper. When that first came on, we're like, yeah, man, this is the promise. This is, and it never quite got finished. And then all of a sudden, boom, Cell401, there it is, and done. You know, you had to know that Peacekeeper was making the attempt or going through that. What were you thinking while they were getting attention and you were developing this? What was going on there? Friendly rivalry?
Well,
what?
Ironically. Yeah, ironically, Ernie, Peacekeeper, I was an early fan of their app, and then I kept waiting for them to finish it and kept waiting and waiting. And when I realized that is not going to happen, basically I said, it's one of these things. If you want to do something right, you got to do it yourself, and we did it.
All right, so that was one thing you go, yeah, go, you're not done. Hell, I can do that. Give me a weekend and a hackathon, and I'm all over it. Boom, done. You know,
that was about $600 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, see, it's always, you know, it's the right guy at the right time. Just get it right. All right. So Cell411, describe to people how it works. We have some graphics up here on the video feed. But and when I opened it up, I put it in. It wants you to fill out some, you know, information, because when you hit the, you know, help me, I've fallen, I can't get up, it goes to somebody. Who's it go to?
Well, so basically the app revolves around these ideas of cells or groups. So if you want to think of them as groups, that's fine, but we call
militia.
Them cells.
It's a militia. You guys are going to be a militia. I knew you're going to be a militia, and you guys are going to have guns and respond. And intruder and militia of the man's not going to like it because you'd like say the word gun or something.
That's right. And we actually named them cell on purpose because, you know, how the government thinks everyone is a terrorist. So we said, hey, let's organize ourselves in some independent cells. Why not?
Yeah, just go ahead. Yes. What the hell, man? They're going to, you know. See, this is when you have a competition or a demonstration of making government services obsolete. You have a replacement. You're doing better. You have a solution. Yeah, there's going to be something, man. They don't take kindly to you mucking with their monopoly. So go ahead. And sorry for the interruption, but I want to make that point that what you're setting up is in direct opposition to collectivization and coercive, we're going to do it our way government thing. How are
absolutely.
They reacting to it?
Absolutely, Ernie. This is absolutely right. And really, if you think about it, personal safety, Ernie, is kind of like this last bastion of monopolistic. I mean, it's not the very last, but it is one of these last bastions of monopolistic controls that the government has over our lives, because they've brainwashed people. If you go to school or college, most Americans, especially younger folks, are basically brainwashed to think that unless the government is involved, your life is in danger, you cannot defend yourself, you need cops, you need military, you need firefighters, you need government services, and without these services, everything is going to go to hell. And we know that's not true, right? Come on.
Yeah, no, this is, given the opportunity, people make good decisions. They got enough information and they're just not evil. It's like they got to make up something. You know, it's like, my phone's blowing up. It's got an Amber Alert. Okay. Now I'm wondering if you have some kind of centralized of, oh my God, the breaking news of we want to communicate. You're going to reserve that to, you know, Virgil be able to send something out to everybody if you need to?
No, Ernie, this is actually a fully decentralized system. So there's no central authority. We don't send anyone if you need help. It's kind of, you know, it's upon you to build your own network in your own life. So add your friends, your family, your neighbors, add them to yourselves, so that way you can depend on them and they can depend on you in your own community. It's not up to me to send help to you, man. Sorry
no,
about that.
No, I'm wondering if you got, so, you know, there's always...
You got to promote self-independence here.
Well, there's going to be somebody that'll say, man, don't you want to have a one-if by land, two-if by sea kind of, you know, send from the central command of just wanted to let you know because I can, Amber Alert kind of thing? I mean, no, not going to do that.
No, this is not for people that need to have their hands held, unfortunately. This is an app that is for self-reliant, independently-minded folks who want to kind of take control of their lives. That's why we built this.
Okay, no, I'm hip. You know, the government's always wanting to have some kind of central we communicate with everybody thing, and then you got V for Vendetta up there telling you what's what. No, that's just the way it works. All right.
That's right.
So here we have an application. Describe to me, after I set it up and I put, you know, contacts, you know, to my friends, neighbors, family, you know, I've fallen, I can't get up, I need a defibrillator, or I got an invasion, I got fire, I got, you know, how does the app actually work? Describe it for us.
Yeah, so basically it's very simple. It's a very simple concept. It uses GPS coordinates, so the app, once you need to issue out an emergency alert to your friends or a certain group of people, you can just tap a couple of buttons and the app will grab your exact location, will send the alert to the group of trusted people that you select, and they will receive the alert with your exact location. They will have the chance to respond. They'll have the chance to say, no, I can't help you. They can get turn-by-turn directions to your location with an estimated time and distance, and you get notified if your friend or your family or someone in your community is on the way to help you. So it's very, very easy, very intuitive, very straightforward. It's a very simple concept, but at the same time, it's a very powerful concept too, because so far nobody has managed to build anything similar to this, which is why I think we've gotten almost 100,000 downloads so far. So it's pretty exciting.
Okay. Now, here's another thing. Because you have this ability to communicate between individuals for whatever I got and you need and I need and you got and kind of done, that opens up for a lot of things like barter or currency exchange or ride sharing. Okay. So tell me some of the
That's
other
right.
things that immediately come on the tails of you starting this up.
So we basically just added a ride-sharing feature. That's what you're asking about, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, well, it's not going to be that. I mean, it's just an example of the kind of things that can be added on, you know?
Yeah. We did do that. Again, you gave the example of Peacekeeper earlier. There was another, Liberty Movement-driven app called Arcade City, and they've been talking about ride-sharing for about a year now. About a decentralized ride sharing. And after months and months of waiting around for them, because I was excited about them too, we said, hey, what the hell? You know, this is not going to happen either. How long is it going to take us? How much money? How many hours is it going to take us to add ride sharing into this app? We figured out we can do it in 3 to 4 weeks. We did it. We have ride sharing. It's completely decentralized. Drivers get to control their rates. Drivers get to control what currencies they accept. They can take Bitcoin, Monero, Dash, Silver. You know, I went to our launch party in Austin. I got rides to and from the airport, and I paid with the 2 silver ounces for my ride. So we're kicking ass and taking names here with this, Ernie.
Okay. I yesterday I had on Peter Schiff, and he's always going on about, you know, different stuff and everything. Finally, I went ahead and did it, and it was goldmoney.com. Have you heard of this?
I have not.
Okay. Because he brought up, you know, like taxi. Why would you not want gold or whatever? You got to go through KYC and anal probe of like you're doing a Glidera or Circle account or whatever, or Bitcoin. But I just went in and funded it with a debit card of my Visa, and I bought gold. I chose to have it stored in Singapore, and I use a MasterCard that I use anywhere, and they debit my gold account, and I can transfer straight gold to somebody's account, or they convert it to dollars. It's like a shapeshift for money and gold right now. I go,
sounds like an awesome idea.
I go, you freaking kidding me? I've been, you know, back when they were doing e-gold, back in the 2003, we were trying to use that. And so now it's done. And now the thing is, I'm being a Cell 411 driver. You know, how I get compensated is what, up to me, and then I put, yeah, this guy didn't rip me off, or how's that when you have it totally decentralized, how does it work?
It's up to you. It's up to you as a driver. It's completely decentralized. We're not in charge of, you know, what, how much the drivers charge. We're not in charge of what currency they're willing to accept. You know, Ernie, if drivers want to take a burger in exchange for a ride, they can do that. If they want to take a chicken, that's fine with me too.
It's not my business. Now we go through the drive-through.
So this is the power of decentralized networks in reality. It actually works. We're giving rights to people for bartering, which is great. And this really upsets governments because they cannot tax these transactions, which makes me very, very happy.
Now, well, that also makes you very, very target, okay? So the problem that Uber had is they still had servers, you know? So they kick in the doors and they're like, hut, and taxi drivers don't like, and you had like an address. But, you know, where's the centralization for you? I mean, once the software's out, it's on somebody's phone and you never hear nothing, or you got a web page. I mean, you know, if they came and raided and they started punching you, how would that affect you? Right, how do you this? Yeah, I mean, how do you get money?
We have some servers overseas. We have some servers here in the United States. To be completely honest with you, Ernie, if the government, the federal government decides to shut us down, they can probably do that. So there are some technical barriers to making this fully decentralized in the technical sense. But from an application perspective, we are fully decentralized. We don't control what people do. We don't control any aspects of their utilization of our app and the platform. So you're asking some really good questions here. And I believe that we stayed away from pricing because that's kind of our legal way out of this. And I know that it's, you know, we're treading water here. We're kind of walking a thin line. But ultimately, if we are not getting involved in the payment process, there's very little the government can do about it because we're kind of like a Craigslist for rides.
Right.
And for emergencies. And
okay, now this is the one thing I wanted to bring up. It's Craigslist for everything, and you leave it up because when you go to Craigslist, you go see somebody. You know, I always ask them, I go, hey, do I get a discount if I pay in silver? And about 1 of 10, they'll go, yeah, as a matter of fact, that'd be a good idea. Let's do that.
Right.
So I'm going, okay, let me give you another app idea, and I'm going, this should be done, and that since you're doing everything in 2 weeks, you should do this, and this is it. Here it is. I'm like, can I go sell 411 for some labor? Where's that 14-year-old I need to pull some weeds? Where's that, you know, 18-year-old that make $20 an hour, do what I need, and I kind of in the social networking, go put up some dome and mow my grass, or kind of, I just, you know, put, hey, sell 411, I need somebody to come over here and, you know, and share with some labor and help and kind of, and went, oh, did you pay your minimum wage? Did the man get his cut? How did you pay him? What did you start decentralizing labor? You start decentralizing rides, you decentralize emergency services, you decentralize all kinds of stuff. You're going to be on a freaking bullseye radar screen or something.
That's right. Yeah. Ironically, this is already on the list for us to work on.
Of course it is. You know, what the hell's the difference between somebody come labor with a car or not? I mean, you know, all right. So decentralized labor, right? Right? What are you going to call it?
I don't know. I don't know. What do we call this? I have no idea. But I think that's kind of the future of human exchange, honestly. I think people, you know, this idea of decentralizing everything, that's kind of the future of technology and the future of the world. And it doesn't have to be on a blockchain. This is where I've kind of argued with the guys from Arcade City over. Not everything has to be on a blockchain. It's not necessary. We can decentralize things in all kinds of other ways, and we're making it happen. It doesn't have to be on the blockchain. And honestly, I think a lot of people just throw the blockchain word around as a marketing tool anyway. So, yeah.
All right. This is one reason why I wanted to talk to you. I'm gonna encourage. It's just in the beginning. We're starting to do the artwork. We're setting up the coding. Derek Slopey over at Agora Hosting is starting to set up the page. And I'm gonna have you one of the first guys to go take a look. You ready? You ready? Are you at a computer? You ready?
Sure.
All right. ArizonaPirateParty.com. The whole point of this is not a political party. Go vote, none of that crap. I'm like, no. So my thing is I'm going, I could see this be a pirate hacking, pirate software, pirate life, pirate. So I'm going, all right, what classifications are you? We're going to add some more. We'll probably have no more than now 9 or 10 or something. But media, you decentralize that. Energy, decentralize it. Communication, decentralize it. Food, water, shelter, transportation. Okay. So in the, you know, we could put emergency services up there and so on. And we're just now starting to get the art, and we're going to have a big pirate ship that we're going to, you know, we're just in, say, Arizona a lot, and we'll have some fun. But the point is, is the promotion of decentralization of everything. Okay. There was no, that's why I had Dr. Paul on today. And he still sees the Levolution. Yeah, we're still going in and doing, and he's getting, you know, 60,000 subscribers to his YouTube Liberty Report, and we're kind of, you know, I'm going, that's awesome, great, we, you know, wonderful and peace. But I'm going, I want to go another level. I want to go sell 411. I want to be all buds with Virgil Vaduva, and I'm going, hey, what are they doing? Decentralization of everything as a concept, and with the software to do it. So, you know, as you go in and you, each one of these categories that we have, what am I going to have in transportation? I'm going to have Cell 411, Rideshare, Connect, whatever, you know, as an option for any and everybody that I can get to look at as we do local activist stuff, as we're having fun, we're in parades, all kinds of crap that we're doing. What are they going to do? They're going to go to this page and start seeing how to live a decentralized life along with the software that you have available promoted. You see my point?
Right, right, exactly. That's exactly the direction we're heading into. Unfortunately, it takes time, you know, for these ideas to, you know, it's great to have ideas. It's a little bit difficult to take these ideas and implement them into an app. There's a lot of work there, a lot of things that we need to consider, but this is really the direction we're heading into.
No, this is, it takes me about a freaking day after you do all the work and I just promote it. That makes it a lot easier. But, you know, my whole thing is this is what I've been screaming about. I tell you what did it. It was, you know, this controversy, the Pizzagate thing, all this. And I remember I was a young activist in the early 90s, and you're probably about my same age, and you went through this in freaking Romania. I mean, you know, damn, they're not messed up in the head. You know, so I remember this darkness of evil of the central government of they got a plan for me, and they're going to tell me about it. And I'm just going, you know, there needs to be something. I'm not – and then – the Levolution took off. We had a bunch of other stuff that we had done and working on for decades. But I'm going, this was all just a build towards what you're doing. It was just a build towards we take control of our life. We take control of what we do. We take control of where we spend our money. We determine what that money is. We, you know, we decentralize it. A freaking guy got a computer in my pocket. This is a friend of mine says, he goes, this is a Vujia Day moment. We haven't been here before, okay? So I'm going, this is a opportunity for us to expand this concept, and you're finding out that as much as people understand it and want to do it, they didn't have the technical ability or resources to get it done. What are you finding out that's different? You're just smarter, have more money, they bit off more than they could chew, they didn't know what? What's the difference?
I think the key is just is building things one brick at a time. I think a lot of these companies have great ideas, but they fail to deliver and they fail to implement because they try to do everything at once. They try to basically reach to the sky with everything, and instead of building one little feature at a time, building it one day at a time, they try to do everything at once. And that's probably the main reason why a lot of these organizations fail. And we've tried to kind of do it the other way around. We said, hey, let's take a progressive approach to this. Let's do one feature today. Do a very basic app. In another month, we'll add two more features. In another month, we'll add five more and 10 more. And here we are a year later. And we are basically the leader in this market. There's nobody that comes even close to us. And we did well. I would like to think we built a decent platform. It's not perfect, but in another year, you know, it may be even close to perfection. We never know. But that's why we are where we are today.
You know, you also tell us about the live video streaming application.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a core feature about 6 months into the project. We basically, this came out of my own police accountability activism when I was arrested at a protest for taking pictures of police, and I had no way of streaming video or let people know what was going on, or my family. It was Christmas Eve, and my wife had no idea why I was in jail. So basically, this came out of my own needs, and I said, hey, we need to have live video in this app, and it has to be video that cannot be erased by police. It cannot be censored. You know, and this gives the users basically the ability to stream live video. And even if a malicious user or a cop or someone who wants to destroy your device, even if they take your phone away from you, they cannot erase the footage no matter what. So we built it this way on purpose to basically make it very difficult, especially for government agents to erase evidence of a crime, for example.
Okay, now this is one thing. Let's say I got my, you know, my pirate cell cove ship. Mate, however the hell you organize of Arizona, and you go, I want to have my cell, my pirate cell. You know, and are you really focusing it ideologically or really for it to be effective? Are you encouraging it to be more geographical? I mean, they can't come to my, you know, rescue right away. I've fallen and can't get up from New Jersey. You know what I mean? So I'm just like,
That's right.
Is this a geographic thing, and you can have different ones? You have more than one cell structure? I can have 15 gazillion different ones? What?
You can have as many cells as you want, and you can create cells anywhere you want, really. But the idea is that people that we crowdsource emergencies, that we crowdsource responses like this to very, very localized areas, because you can send alerts to friends that you may have that live across the country, but they are obviously not going to be able to come and help you. However, they can actually forward alerts to other friends. So we made alerts to be forwardable, so that way you can pass them on to other people that may be able to help. So, you know, we've thought about a lot of these aspects of emergency response when we designed an art, you know.
When you have an activist event, there's an event going on, and you need to, like, you know, and we're going in the activist of we're needing to save us, and they need to shut it down. They're going, oh, no, we're in Tahrir Square, and you're not allowed. You're Tiananmen, nope. Tehran, nope. In Turkey, we just Istanbul, nope. We just turn off the Twitter. Does that have any effect on this?
Yeah, unfortunately, because we use the data, the existing mobile networks that cell phone and smartphones run on, if the government decides to basically shut down the entire mobile infrastructure, or let's say AT&T goes down or Verizon is completely shut down, obviously this is a huge shortcoming of our infrastructure. But it is made for mobile devices, unfortunately. There's no way, we can't really have it both ways. You know, there are some options for mesh networks out there that we looked at, but mesh networking is really difficult to do. But it's something that it's kind of on our list of things to pursue and understand how to implement better. But that's really tough. That's a tough one to crack.
Yeah, we're trying to get hold of Brian Sovereign. I want to pull him into this, you know, before we let you go and say, yo, what's up? Got you there, Brian? No, it didn't, yeah, Donna's going to take care of it. Hold on. Now, what we're going to go ahead and do is I want to have Brian have some say, because we're going to be talking about security and so on, too, and there's a little overlap that we're talking about with you right now. So I'm going, well, the security of this, you're saying, yeah, we're using, you know, the data packages going back and forth between the cell towers of the kind of, well, then that was kind of Mycelium's promise that they wanted to have to where it's a mesh networking of the phones, and we're at the rally of it doesn't matter because we're just meshing the interface between each individual phone, and we can still, and then somebody that's outside of the blocked area can go, you know, is that run across your guys' thought process? Yeah, trying to get you and Brian on. We lost one, and then we'll just get Brian in a little bit. Or do you want to try and get Brian on now, Donna? No, we'll just go ahead and finish up with Virgil. I got you, Virgil?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, we'll go ahead and get Brian. He'll try to call in the multiple that's like pushing buttons and stuff. Now, when you have mesh networking was what I was asking about. Now, mesh networking, you're going to be able – is that – in the future, are you thinking about that so you're not dependent on the cell towers?
For sure, yeah. There are several mesh networking open source projects out there that are pretty cool. One of them uses, actually several of them rely on, ham radios that you can do, you can use for data. And there are some other, you know, peer-to-peer type technologies out there for mesh networking. You know, this is not something I'm an expert on, but it's definitely on the list of things for us to look at, you know, in the future. Because, you know, it's really the only way to avoid, if you're paranoid about the government shutting things down, you know, this is the way they're going to shut down entire, you know, mobile mobile networks for basically an entire country if they want to do that. And I'm pretty sure Obama has been lobbying for an internet shutdown button or whatever the hell they called it.
Oh, hell, they'd send it to the UN, and then China goes, hey, you're going to centralize and they can turn off, and we want to be able to have the turn off if we submit and they turn it off. And I'm going, screw you. And then we got Elon Musk coming in, you know, goes to the FCC for whatever reason, screw them. But he goes, hey, I'm going to put up 4,000 satellites of Wi-Fi all the time in a couple of years and bite me.
Right.
Then what?
Right.
And I'm going, nan. Virgin Galactic, they're talking about using CubeSats. You know, Elon's is going to have, like, you know, Mini Coopers up there or something. But the, you know, so I'm like, this is, it requires, so I'm surprised there hasn't been more. What is the holdup? Is it just your technical ability? Or is it?
It's technical, Ernie. It's really, really hard to do right. You know, it's very difficult to do from a technical perspective. Architecture is there, and people have a good understanding on how to do mesh networking, but it's not, you know, the market is not there yet. If it was easy to do, believe me, it would be a very popular technology, but it's not there just yet.
Well, this is something, I mean, you're making, are you feeling that now you got the groundwork done and you're just adding on other applications and features and benefits of your software?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's where we are right now. I feel like we're about 75% there. We're working on a real-time IP messaging sort of service right now to basically allow people in cells to communicate with each other in real time. So that's kind of something that's been missing, and it's a big chunk, big feature that is we don't have yet. So within the next month or so, I'm hoping to have that ready. And after that, it's going to be mostly translating the app in other languages, because Spanish is a big deal for us right now. I've had
you
several,
are so not allowed. They are going to come after you. You're the antithesis to everything that they. You're not allowed. Oh, and from Romania, they're double not allowed. Okay, I'm like, yeah. You know, where's your vulnerability? Where are they going to? How are you resourcing this? I mean, it's, you know, are you monetizing it in some way? Is there somebody you got a bunch of Bitcoin early on? Some what?
Yeah, well, ideally, it'd be nice to make some money off of this, but right now, that's not really a concern, because we had an early angel investor that was very generous. He gave us about $250,000, mostly in Bitcoin, as a Bitcoin investment.
Okay, we're adding Brian. Are you still there, Virgil? Did we lose him? I'm sorry. She's trying to merge him, and Skype's not letting us. So we'll go ahead and finish up with you in a little bit, and we'll get back to Brian. I was hoping to overlap with you guys, because, you know, that I'm sure it'd be a good show. I don't know what the problem is, and I'm not doing it, so I'm not going to worry about it. So the threat that you have from anyone coming after you is what? Your bank account? They know where you live? You know, what do you think your threat is?
I think you know, the biggest threat will basically be some sort of lawsuit from the state claiming that we, you know, we're interfering with their emergency services or something like that. The city of Austin already banned us from operating within the city once we released the ride-sharing feature, so we're basically not allowed to offer services
within Austin. Okay, wait, time out. Crazy. I was in Austin at Texas Bitcoin Conference last year, I think. I'm sitting there, and Paul Snow, and we're being interviewed, and I just, beginning of Sunday's program on stage, I just got an Uber ride. I come in, I go, you know what? This guy doing a 1099, they get, I don't know, whatever it is, a quarter of whatever he makes. They he's got to file in the taxes. I go, what happens when they go to another service that's decentralized like what you're doing, when they go to that and nobody even knows, and then they turn to the attorney that was up there and go, well, let's talk to the attorney. I go, wait. If I give a crap what the attorney or some legislator says or Austin City Council, then it's the wrong tech. How the hell can they even say you can't anyway?
That's the thing. They think they can, but in reality, there's nothing they can do. We've had probably a couple of hundred rides offered within the city of Austin within the last month and a half or 2 months, and nothing has happened. I mean, I haven't heard from any drivers being harassed by Austin bureaucrats or anything like that. So I'm not too worried about it. I kind of, you know, tell people that, hey, you guys are kind of on your own. You know, just be aware of your surroundings and be aware if cops are going to harass you. You know, keep that in mind. But this is really the power. You know, and also the disadvantage of decentralized technologies. You know, Uber, you know, is willing to pay the legal fees for their drivers and all that. I'm not going to do that.
No.
You know,
yeah, you're going our
drivers as adults.
Yeah, so no, I'm hip, man. I'm hip. You know, if they don't want women, don't want to pick up guys that might hit on them, then don't pick up guys that might hit on you. I mean, whatever. All right, I just want to make sure that we got you out today, and I know you're busy. I'm going to try one more time. If we lose you, then we lost you. But I'm going to try and get Brian in one more time. I'm going to do it, and then we'll see what happens. But if we lose you, you know, it's been great. I want to make sure that you know that starting the first week in January, we're building all this up and getting ready, and we're going to launch and the whole line of logos and artwork and pins and shirts and, you know, pirate, awesome, whatever we're going to. But the whole reason is, one, to have fun, and two, is to promote exactly what you're doing in a lot of areas. And you're going to be having my Liberty Labor app is going to be when?
Well, within the next few months, I imagine that we're going to add some features along these lines. So just hang in there. You should see something probably by spring for sure.
Yeah, I just came up with the name Liberty Labor, man.
That's awesome. I love it.
All right. You see, we're on the same page, Virgil. I'm like, damn.
You are.
You know, I'm going, and even Ron Paul, he was like, well, we need to, you know, and kind of in the political, and I could see him going, yeah, no, he understands this, but he's got that other area covered. I'm going down to the next horizon. It's geographical. They keep thinking in terms of flags and borders and boundaries, and it's generational. Right. It's a worldwide of bite me, and you have the actual software to do it. And I want to help promote it. And if you help me help you, and you know, a little artwork here and a cross promo of we put it in, whatever, I will get you something. You'll go look at, man, the downloads in Arizona be, what the hell, man? You go, damn.
Let's do it, Ernie. Sounds like a plan, man.
All right, cool. Thanks for coming on, man. Hold on
Thank
a second.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm glad we hooked it up today because it goes into the day. I got to get to Brian. Let's go ahead and try him. And if I lose you, I lose you, but we'll see. All right, here we go. All right, Donna, come help me find Brian. Okay, I'm going to hit the plus sign. Add participants. Add people to this call. Brian, I got you?
Yeah, you got me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. Now, Virgil, I got you?
I'm still here.
Yay, I did it. I think Brian had his mute on is what I think was going on.
Is that Virgil Vaduva there?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, hey, Virgil, good to hear you, man.
Hey, Brian, good to hear, man.
Okay, now this is, we just got an understanding of Cell 411 about the different decentralized apps that become, I tell you, Brian, so that you know, here's one that's coming, okay, this is what's coming. He's going to have Liberty Labor or decentralized labor. I ordered, you know, I get me a car, or that car comes with somebody go out and pull weeds, you know. Then you start bypassing the man and Social Security and doing actual work and labor. How long do you think before somebody wants to stop them, Brian? How long?
Yeah, I could see that one to get a crackdown on pretty fast. So, I mean, is that like a decentralized, what was that called, TaskRabbit or something? Is it like that?
I think that's what Ernie has in mind. TaskRabbit, I've never used them, but I think they're along the same lines. You just order a service, and someone kind of goes out there and you dispatch it to them, and they get it done. But they have some limitations too. I don't think they're decentralized, and I don't think they allow for custom currencies and custom payments.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's a great idea. I mean, but yeah, you can bet the state's going to want to crack in on that pretty quick.
Well, my thing is the Arizona, you know, kind of just doing this pirate party, decentralized promotion of everything. You know, of course, it's going to be like Agora hosting. It's going to be encryption. There's going to be, you know, cell phone. When you go after their emergency services and you go, yeah, you thought you at least had the monopoly on the fireman. And I'm going, yeah, well, my neighbor's got a fire extinguisher across, you know, the way. And God forbid I, you know, call a police officer for something. At least my neighbors know what dog not to shoot. You know, so I'm going, this is... This is a direct threat, and I'm wondering how centralized, what office building, how accessible you are, how many bank accounts you have, Virgil, that they're just going to, yeah, we don't like you none too much. You did like this freedom stuff. And that's right. One of the benefits of being decentralized is that they can't really go after anybody unless they go and pretend they're giving you a ride or something. I don't know how that's going to work out.
They can still, I don't know if Brian agrees with this, but Ernie, I think they can still go after folks involved in decentralized projects. I mean, technically, the federal government can do anything they want. They can go after Bitcoin Core developers if they want to trump up charges against them. So just because they cannot, for example, shut down the Bitcoin blockchain, they can still go after the people behind it and harass them and give them a hard time. So it depends what you mean by shutting down. There's a lot of things they can do to make your life miserable.
I don't know. What do you think, Brian? Are we just, head down, plow, and make them do it? Or do we count on them or doing it and we try and stop them? And what's the method?
Well, I think you could build something like that to where the state would effectively have to play whack-a-mole. I agree with Virgil that, they could, they could still harass certain people about it, but you could build it in such a way. And if you have it open, and again, you do go with decentralization, that people could just, they could keep rebuilding it, every time that it gets shut down if they want to. I mean, I'm kind of reminded, something that's somewhat popular, during activist events are these idea of street medics. But, one of the important things to keep in mind with these street medics is that usually they're covering themselves from head to toe. Like, you have no idea who they are. They're just kind of running up to you and they do some kind of first aid and then off they run. And I think that anonymity is kind of key to allow that to keep on going. But like I said, I could see where you could set it up to where, again, the state would have to play whack-a-mole against you. And, over time, do they get tired of it? Well, I don't know.
Well, how autonomous is the software? Once somebody downloads it and they start creating their own cell structure and do all that, I mean, does it phone home? I mean, how much do you know from then?
Well, it depends. So right now, Cell 401, it is decentralized and it isn't. It's kind of like a mix. So from a technical perspective at layer 3 and so on, it's really not a decentralized app. So we have servers that we're hosting in Amazon's cloud. The servers are distributed. They're hosted in other countries as well. We have some backups that we use for failover. But from an application layer perspective, it's a highly decentralized app. So it's kind of, the word decentralized can mean different things to different people too. So we got to be careful how we throw that around as well.
Okay, well, I want to ask this question. If I'm using Cell 411 and they kicked in your doors and knocked down and blew up your servers of whatever, and I'm going, hey man, I fell down and I pushed a button, does it still work and go out to my contacts and I don't care what happened to your servers?
Yeah, it will function just fine. But there's a good possibility that they can go to Amazon, for example, and they can ask them to shut down some of our core servers that offer core functionality of the app. So for the platform, at least the app will continue to work, but some features may actually not be working. So it's, it's one of these things. We're not on a blockchain, so that's a disadvantage of it. And also that's an advantage, I believe. So it depends, again, Ernie, how you look at what the word decentralized means.
Okay. Are your servers in the U.S. or are they out of country?
They are in several countries.
Okay, so this is all right. So, what do you think the vulnerability of this? What are we going to learn from this experiment, Brian? Is there, because that's what we're going to be talking about with Brian today is security. And I heard his show last week after my show. I was like, oh, Brian's got to come on, tell me all about it. Because I'm wondering, as we get invested in this kind of decentralized uses, it's almost like I got to put a disclaimer or a paragraph there, not to be available during the zombie apocalypse or something. Brian,
what was the question again, Ernie?
Well, I mean, how much investment should we put into these that aren't fully decentralized? When it's needed the most is when it's good, the most effective. When it's the most, that's when they the most don't want it to work. So I'm wondering, how safe can we be security wise for semi decentralized apps like this? I mean, should we promote it? Should we be using it? Should we, put a lot of effort into it? And then when it happens, we'll find out what the vulnerabilities are. Are there main ones? What do you think?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's great, and most apps, decentralized or not, usually do this to where they test things out in a very local area at first. You go to San Francisco or the Silicon Valley, or whatever, and I mean, you know, you're in a very different world. There's suddenly all these different technologies that you can take advantage of that just don't exist anywhere else. So I think, you know, testing it out, at first in certain areas, I think would be a great idea just to see the viability of it. I mean, for example, like there was I forget the name of it now, but there was a mail service that they would read your, like they could collect your mail. I think it was only in Austin and I want to say San Francisco, but they could collect your mail for you and they would digitize the mail for you. And then, they would email all of your mail to you. Now, a lot of people love this service, but it got shut down. Why? Because it cut into kind of the spam mail, you know, good old-fashioned spam snail mail that the USPS relies upon people getting. And so, I mean, the government shut that down in a heartbeat, even though that was tested in very local areas. Now, that's, of course, again, a very centralized service. And I totally agree that with Virgil saying, be careful how you define decentralization or, you know, what's semi-decentralization and all this. I definitely think it's something that should be tried out in certain areas first and maybe see what the reaction is and then gauge from that. I would really test bed first.
You know, there's one, I'm looking it up now, Traveling Mailbox. Derek does a lot of the coding for that. And it's Traveling Mailbox started in some, dorm room's bed of exactly what you're talking about. And they're all over it. They're blowing up. They even got an address here in Phoenix now. So this is exactly what you're talking about. You mail to them. They go through, the mail, put it digitized, scan it in or forward it or whatever you want to do with it. And boom, you got the, mail. It's called travelingmailbox.com. Something with the decentralization of a cell of contacts of what you're doing with this application with Cell411, what are the limits, Virgil? I mean, what are some of the things you can't do or you wouldn't do? Are you trying to build a platform you can do just about anything?
Well, right now we have the means to pretty much do anything we want, but there are some limitations. Again, I mean, if you're looking for solutions to work in case of the apocalypse or Jesus is coming back and we need some way to notify everyone of that, if the internet is going to be down, and if we were talking earlier about this, so-called internet shutdown button that the, Obama has been asking about for a while, if we run into a situation where ISPs all over the world are down, it doesn't ultimately even matter. You're going to be in a place where ham radios are going to be your best friend, and your blockchain apps are really probably not going to be that useful to you. So if we're talking apocalyptic scenarios here, I don't think it matters. But we try to build apps and platforms for today's world and kind of anticipate the future too. I don't honestly see the apocalypse happening anytime soon here. So I think we're good, but it's still good. It's a good idea to plan for scenarios where, malicious government agents can attempt to take you down.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
I kind of try to see both ways in this.
Virgil, you went through Romania, Ceausescu. I bet you it freaking looked like the zombie apocalypse then.
Yeah, well, it was, but I would like to think that the internet would have still been even in that scenario. I don't know.
I mean, of all the people to say, no, that would never happen, Wow, I remember when that happened. I'm old enough to remember, man. Point. That was damn. Yeah, you're lining up your leader and shooting him against a wall. I mean, it was that bad. Let's put it that way. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Brian and I are going to yak about some other stuff and everything. Virgil, thanks for coming on and sharing time. Anything you wanted to ask or point out, Brian?
No. I'm really impressed with Cell411 and what it's been able to do. Good work there, man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's not a perfect app. I know that. We're trying to build on it and improve it as much as we can every day. So thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I'll be in touch. We're going to be doing some big promotion of doing and kind of whatever, and you can help me help you with some art or whatever, and kind of we're going to make it go where, man.
Sounds great, guys. Take care.
All right. See you later, Virgil. Thanks for coming on.
Bye.
Yeah, sorry, Brian. I wanted to make sure we got him in today. He was supposed to be in the third hour, but he had a meeting. He had to whatever, and I just wanted to get him in. That was
no problem. No problem.
The what I wanted to talk to, you know, Brian Sovereign, Sovereign Tech, on, you know, do some promo on you real quick. Talk about your program and your websites and a lot of the work that you do, and then we'll get into the security thing. Go ahead and promote me some Brian.
Sure thing. Yeah, so I host a show called Sovereign Tech. Of course, it's S-O-V-R-Y-N, which is spelled just like my last name. And it's a show that's really all about, you know, just kind of keeping people on the bleeding edge and a lot of analysis of what a lot of the, you know, a lot of the technologies that are coming out and a lot of the real solutions that people can take advantage of to get real freedom in their life, for one. But also, you know, just, again, it's really to keep an eye on things, because as much as the mainstream, you know, news gives you, you know, a lot of lines of, well, BS, tech news does the same thing, to where they really, like, they don't let you in on everything they do what the mainstream news does, where they're telling you sort of a half truth, or they're telling you a truth, but there's stuff that they're not mentioning to you. It's kind of almost lies of omission. And so Sovereign Tech kind of thrives on being able to tell people about some of those things. But then also, it's a very fun show too. And I like to have fun because I'm also a video game designer. You can go to zomiaofflinegames.com and you can get in on some genuinely freedom-loving games. I enjoy doing that. I have a ton of projects that I do, but the best place, just go to zog.ninja and you can find out about everything I do. And of course, you can see every episode, or, you know, listen to every episode of Sovereign Tech. And I also do another show called Sex and Science Hour. It's all about just trying to have the good life while we're here.
Okay, now that's one thing that I always wondered. I'm going, yeah, they got every video game on the planet of we're going to laser beam blow up of do of something. And if you have Grand Theft Auto and the bad guy is going around, well, he's really an undercover guy. He's got to be an undercover guy, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, you know, isn't there some video game where the goal is to overthrow the tyrannical freaking U.S. government of, you know, drone and whatever the hell? And, you know, it's kind of, no, you must, I see, you know, you'd be some congressional hearing or something. So I'm looking at, you know, you're doing these kind of video games. Do we have those kind of options now? Do I, you know, my grandson starts hitting 12, 13. I'm going, yeah, let me show you the game you need to be playing, you know, they're getting learnified. You got those, huh? Do you?
Well, not yet. I don't have like the ones where you get to take on, say, you know, a more modern government. Mine either take place in the far past or the far future, but they're definitely games where, you know, you're definitely not working for tyrannies, and you're certainly not supporting tyrannies. And I bring up, you know, libertarianism and anarchism, there, like they are woven into the games.
Yeah,
so
no, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be, you know, Hillary, Obama, Trump kind of. I don't care. That's not, you know, obviously you're going up against. It's like when they do Star Wars and it's like clone army of the Sith of, you know, you're going, yeah, it looks kind of like Bush. But if there is some real obvious parallel and education in what the problem was, you know, and I you don't see that. It's just, you know what the problem is? I don't have enough 50 caliber guns on my fighter jet. I mean, I know the problem is that, you see my point? It's more a philosophical thing.
Yeah, exactly. So get to real solutions, and, you know, there's just none of that nonsense. You know, it really strikes at the root of a lot of things. And, like, you know, if there is a bad situation happening, again, it brings up, you know, more ethical solutions. And again, you're not working for any state, because you're right, Ernie. Like, it's annoying. Every game, you're either working for, you know, you're working for the government in some form or fashion. And boy, that's annoying.
Yeah, no. You got to be an undercover, double agent, undercover with the kind of the line of kind of then you're okay, you know, kind of crap.
Right, yeah.
And do your games work on Linux?
Not yet.
You slack.
Right now they are.
Now, all you guys give me crap, man, and you make a game doesn't even work on Linux. I'm sitting here ready to download, go play, and you're not. You know, I'm going, very bad.
All right, I'll caveat it. You could actually, there's an emulator for Linux called Wine. And my games work beautifully in that, but straight out of the gate, they don't work yet, but that's coming.
Okay. So I got to go download. Yeah. That's more geek crap. Man, damn it.
Yep.
I need a grandpa just button. Okay. Now you've been talking here recently in the last week. I didn't have a chance. You know, it was in the background while I'm editing. I go, and I want to listen to, and I can't rewind, you know, cause damn it.
Yep.
You know, then I go, cause it was live on the show. So I'm going, all right, security. Where are we at now? You know, give us. You keep getting more electronics and more stuff, and oh my goodness, when they got a full body suit of VR, and I can go, participate in the invasion of the galaxy of the space babes of whatever. You know, I might be ready to get me a 3D kind of virtual, maybe not. You know, what kind of how much am I bringing them? I got my eyeballs up against something to get my retinal scan and connect inside my living room. If they get the all the people that were here for the Christmas party, if I'm like, what? So where am I vulnerable in VR? Should I just write it off? I'm never going to want it in my house.
Oh, with VR, so okay, so that's kind of a big question, or like that. There's just a lot to unpack there. It depends on what VR technology you're using. Like, honestly, with virtual, and I'm very excited about virtual reality. It's one of the few technologies that have come out recently. I mean, it's been around since, like, you know, the 80s and 90s.
Now, yes, I've been waiting on it all my life. I've been waiting on it all my life, man. I'm like,
you're right.
I remember reading books about it. You know, I'm going to be Captain Kirk on the Starship Enterprise spinning around in my chair. And I'm going, yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about. And now I'm like, I don't know, man, if I want them tapping right into my skull and seeing everything and doing and scanning and whatever. So give me the, you know, what I should look for. What kind of, you know, seal of approval of this VR in your game?
Well, I think, I mean, fortunately, there's a lot of open source projects that are getting involved in VR. And that's step one. If you want to be able to trust something, you want it to be open source. That, now, just because something's open source doesn't mean you should trust it. But that's just step one to getting to, you know, to a seal of approval, like you say. Now, I mean, some of these technologies are a little worrisome. Like there's ones from Intel where they're releasing where you don't even have to connect it to a computer. It's literally just the VR headset and, you know, the computer's in the headset. However, that has like a million sensors and cameras on it that is designed to map out your world. Now, for run-of-the-mill VR, that's great. But if you're a privacy advocate, well, that raises a lot of concerns. Not all VR, you know, kind of works that way. There's some where it's just a very basic headset with a motion sensor on it that connects to your PC. And something like that, you know, I think you could be a little more comfortable with. And that's really like more the interesting direction that I look at.
Well, you're talking about when you're doing a VR headset that maps your world, kind of like the Halo. It's what it does is the walls can have texture. I mean, it's real wall, so you can walk around. You're not running into crap. But the wall is a panel of the starship. It's got buttons and dials on, and the monster's jumping out of the bathroom door or something. I mean, you know. And this is when they start scanning your room to be able to do that. Well, they're taking a picture. I mean, hell, right. It's like walking around Pokemon going everywhere. Man, the CIA said thank you for playing. You know, now we got mapped inside everybody's house. You know, so I'm going, wow. So privacy is going to be, man, it's going to have to be some effort, you know, and I'm wondering, you know, what is the main private thing that I want to hold into? And I think it would be more thoughts, but what do they want to do? They want to track your thoughts too. Oh, and put this sensor thing on your head so we can tell how evil thought you are as you're blowing aliens away on your video game.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that I think there's a lot of, now, I mean, as far as like what the, you know, say the graphic ability, you know, or the photorealism of VR, like that can go all the way as far as I'm concerned, you know, like, yeah, let's get it to the point of, you know, the fidelity of a holodeck, I guess. But as far as, you know, what makes up that technology, I mean, yeah, I'm with you. Like that there's very real concerns around the privacy, and I mean, you know, the idea of things that can read your thoughts. I mean, they've developed a lot of this stuff. I mean, not to where, I mean, there's like the, I've talked about this on my show Sovereign Tech at times. Granted, the room for error, the margins of error should be something that really has no bearing in court. And I think that's what a lot of this comes down to with a lot of privacy stuff. You know, any technology, I think what a lot of people are concerned about is how can this be used against me in court? And you know, it really, you know, we're in a very new world here where there's a lot of new laws getting laid down and there's a lot of new cases getting laid down. You know, I mean, for, you know, a high profile one that not necessarily has to do with privacy. I mean, it kind of does, but it has to do with, you know, what does technology, like how responsible are you for the technology that you create or use? You could think of the Silk Road case with Ross Ulbricht. So, you know, there's a lot of this stuff. I mean, we're in very strange ground as far as, you know, the status matrix that we live in, because the question becomes is, okay, well, so this can kind of read my thoughts, or this could track my eyes or do something like this. And the real concern, I think, for a lot of people isn't so much privacy, even though I think privacy is absolutely a concern that people should have. But the real concern comes down to how is this going to be used against me in a court of law? And I think the technologies that we know of that exist that are able to, say, read thoughts, or where you could send your thought, literally send your thought over the internet, that's something that's been developed at MIT. You know, okay, great, you can do that, but then, you know, what's the margin of error, and is that margin enough to where I get reasonable doubt, say, if this ever gets held against me? Not even just in a court of law. What if just in your social circles or something? So I think for a lot of people that, you know, that's the underlying concern that a lot of people have is, you know, how can this be used against me, right?
You know, that's one thing that I remember. It was Naomi Wolf, I think she made a big deal out of it, is that when you know you're being surveilled, you act differently. And
yes.
you don't really become the person that you want to be, or explore, or make decisions, or make mistakes, you know, and learn from them, or be even punished. I mean, it's like life is a hockey stick, man. I mean, you're going towards the goal, you start to deviate, and it'll slap you around and kind of get you in the narrow of accepted society of the rink, at least, or something, until you go, you know, drone. But I can see that. The freedom to just explore and act and fantasize about any and everything. And I'm just going, yeah, when they can read your thoughts and you start going off and wandering, the things that I would think about doing as a kid, I go to jail for, you know? And I'm going, I'm not sure that we're going to have a whole new case of law that if they go that route, you can't be prosecuted for any thought. But that's a hate crime. You thought it. And so I'm just, are we trending the wrong way? How much staying power do you have, you think that's going to have on the kind of things you think?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, law is really never a rational thing. So I wouldn't expect it to be on our side in any way, shape, or form. You know, I mean, there's so little understanding of, I mean, most people don't even take the time to really understand, you know, their own thought processes. In fact, there's a great quote, which is that your first thought is your instinct. Your second thought is what you actually think, you know, if you're somebody that really processes stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, if we're going to hold people up against like the very first thing that they think, or, you know, any little thought, well, we're going to run into problems pretty quickly. So, you know, I sort of think that that's just like, that would be so outlandish, and we just don't even have the server space to even like hold all that, that's a future that probably won't come, but I'm just guessing as far as that goes.
Yeah, no, I've been around long enough that, oh, you'll never be this because it takes too much air. There, yeah, that'd be transfer of data. No, that'll never happen. You'll never have live streaming video on the internet. I mean, you know, I've been through this, so to say that nothing will happen, that's never a concern of mine. Yes, we can, and there we will sooner or later of something, but it's a social thing. It's a social norm, and that changes too. It comes down to just opinion. It's just somebody's opinion. I'm going, okay, so what's the opinion? You know, what should it be? And when we decentralize everything, I'm wondering what the powers that be, the common opinion of the people, the public, you know, opinion, the general opinion, is that as we get into more and more capability of decentralizing ourselves and living our life separate from a system, should we be, you know, well, I don't know whether we should be or not, but, you know, I don't think so. But are they going to use law to try and force us back into their system to participate, to pay, to have allegiance to be, you know, subservient? I mean, are we have enough support for the liberty movement that as we try to escape, the crabs aren't going to be trying to pull us back into the bucket, or we just have the tech that we're just going to escape anyway, and you can't grab my leg. You know, you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is one of the more hopeful things, especially when it comes to like privacy and all this, is that I think we can, and that is people that are interested in, you know, personal freedom and all that, I think we can build the technologies, and some of them are already here, that would allow us to effectively disappear from the system. Because one thing that we're realizing is that the NSA, the CIA, all of them, they rely as much, you know, as much as we as just, you know, everyday people rely, say, on Google or on whatever internet service we happen to use, they seem to rely just as much on those services to do their business now. In fact, I mean, like, this is, you know, in a lot of internal documents, they talk about how, you know, the ability to do physical, you know, a SIGINT, you know, to do physical intelligence gathering is like a lost art, you know, for the NSA and the CIA and all this. So like a lot of these people they're really relying on the system, you know, on the big bad internet, as I often call it. And so if we remove ourselves, I think, from a lot of these services, and you know, I think you can effectively disappear, because I mean, that's like, it's very hard for me to not believe that part of the reason they're so big on algorithms and all this is they're trying to automate surveillance as much as they can. But a lot of that is really imperfect. I think it's going to continue to be imperfect for a lot of very practical reasons. And I think the technologies can exist, will exist, that allow people to just end run the entire system itself. Now, not everybody's going to even want to do that. But if you do want to, and it's going to take a little bit of work, I think it's going to be possible.
You know, there is you brought, you know, this up about automating technology, and let me write this down so I don't forget. When they're talking about Mitt Romney being Secretary of State, I'll bring this back. I know you're going, what the hell is he talking about? The Mitt Romney, you're talking about him being Secretary of State, and then they have a couple other meetings, and they go, yeah, it's you know, for his daughter to be part of, and they're making nice with it, yada yada. And I go, you know, think about it. You want intelligence? Who has boots on the ground more? That speak the language, that lives with them a couple of years, than Mormon missionaries. They are in every part of the globe. They speak the language. They go in, and all of a sudden, Mitt Romney goes into, you know, Lumpur of who gives a crap of the, you know, Malaysian hinterland of Cambodia, Laos, something, and he just goes, yep, send in the local Mormon missionaries, and I'm going to get my human intelligence. And I'm going, you know, just the thought process in that, whether that's true or not, it's not even the point. My thing is that all of this reliance on digital and technological, trying to superficial, it's like the James Bond movies where they have Q, I can do more and by 9 a.m. in my pajamas than you can, the whole kind of, yeah, but man, you're going to need somebody in the field. And I'm wondering, is all this automation that they do technically, they can paint almost any kind of picture of anybody they want with selected data inputs. And I'm going, that I'm not feeling they're even going to be better served. Their bias is going to, you know, target Virgil for doing cell 411. You see my point? It's just not, it's not even based on any reality, because they don't know somebody. A computer does.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I see your point. I mean, there's a couple, you know, that's an interesting thing. I mean, the idea of like being able to paint people, you know, however they want to, right? Because, I mean, you could almost make up something digitally and all this. I don't know if I'm getting off topic on this, but I mean, there is an argument to be that some people make. I don't really agree with it. I kind of want to go in the opposite direction, but some people have this idea of what they call radical transparency, to where you don't hide anything about yourself, you show everything about yourself. That way, effectively, nothing can get, like, if anything got made up about you, you could say, no, look, this is what I do. You know, people would know you just so well, they know that was an alien characteristic, you know, that is being applied to you, or that it is a ridiculous accusation being made against you. Some people want to go that route. I'm actually far more interested in the other direction, to where, you know, potentially, like I say, you hide everything that you ever do, and you effectively don't exist to the system itself.
Well, you know, if you open about everything, either you got to be comfortable with every freaking whim that you have, or and then of course it's like, you know, whatever you want to physically hide something, you know, my gold is not there, but anything that you want to experiment or try to be. I can think of people that, you know, for a whole week they want to, you know, explore everything about gender alterization, alterizing of their anatomy, or they want to do. I want to go to a hedonistic brothel bar of gay, you know, bathtub San Francisco, Caribbean, whatever the hell. You know, I mean, anything. I want to go try and be a Muslim. You know, anything that you do, or you want to learn how to, you know, shoot, or you're buying your first gun, or anything that you would think that, yeah, it doesn't matter. It can totally put you in a position that, you know, it's not you, or you don't care, or you were just thinking about it, or you had too much, you know, wine or something. And I'm just, you know, do you think the next generation, younger kids, they're kind of, no, I don't mind being open because I don't mind being open. Do they really realize what that means?
I think we're going to find out just how much. I think the coming generation, you know, kind of the Snapchat generation or whatever you want to call it, I think we're really going to discover how much they actually care, you know, about, you know, or what, like what you're describing, what that means, what that real openness means and what's going to come out of it. I mean, I think this is one of the concerns. There's a lot of people, I mean, people that I think you and I, Ernie, would say are, you know, very intelligent and just, you know, great people that, you know, they're sort of with pride when it comes to privacy, they're like, well, yeah, you know, all right, I get it. I'm handing over my privacy and I don't care. But we haven't really been in this world, in this surveillance state. I mean, yeah, there's been a surveillance state for forever in some form or fashion. But like the one where people are voluntarily contributing to the surveillance state, that's a very new thing. And I don't think we have enough data, enough evidence, enough research. I mean, there's research that says people act differently when they know they're being surveilled, but we don't know really what the overall effects of this openness or of, you know, the surveillance is, at, or, you know, this lack of privacy that people are willfully handing over at times, you know, what that is going to do to the human condition.
Right.
You
know, the entire humanity. We really don't know. Humanity. I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, the diversification, the distributed nature of humans, even geographically and philosophically, and their circumstances, and it gives us some safety in our diversity. It provides, you know, a lot of different ways of doing things and see what works best. And as you get into this totally open, you're not private anymore, and you're just kind of conforming, or you get, it's just that humanity narrows and it narrows and it narrows, and all of a sudden it's a 1984 book. You know, you're goose stepping to whatever, and I'm going, I'm not feeling, you know, and it starts with things like in China where they have citizenship scores, and they start putting them on their tender accounts or whatever their equivalent is. You know, yes, I'm a 93.8% citizen score, man. You know, tell your mom, you know, you take me home. So I'm just, this is where I think we're going, and there has to be a rage against that machine. If there's not, I don't think humanity will reach its full potential. Now, there's you know, bad sides to everything, but when we have people, citizen journalists and so on, empowered with this kind of tech that we can go and go after bad guys based on our criteria, our standards of coercion and deceit and fraud and force, and, you know, when those become, you know, what is right, as opposed to I got a bigger tank, you know, I'm thinking there, it's this battle. It's what it, oh I know what it is. In the most recent Star Wars, there was the bar owner, the Yoda replacement character,
Maz Kanata,
yeah,
right.
What's her name, you know, she goes, oh, against the war, you know, the battle or the war or something. And Rey goes, what war? Well, the war there's always been between good and evil. I mean, that's what, you know, that's the only war there ever has been. You know, you can call it sure. Dark Side and Sith and that and Empire and what, it doesn't matter. It all comes down to, you know, the, you know, Pizzagate people versus not. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm just going, it's always good versus evil. And I'm going, who defines what that is, and how would you define it?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, you're hitting on a huge thing, Ernie. I totally understand. Like, I mean, like one of the things is, and this is where, you know, personally, like, I, you know, the state is a genuine problem. There's absolutely no question about that. But I think one of the bigger issues is what allows the state to thrive. And that is that people, you know, of course, think it's okay or that it's necessary or something like this. The social norms or social mores, you kind of mentioned this earlier. Like, I mean, if, you know, we kind of got to let people be what they want to be. like, I mean, a lot of these, the social reinforcement that goes on with so many different, you know, attitudes and platitudes that really constrain people. I mean, we've got to get people over the fact that, you know what? A guy and a guy can love each other. A woman and a woman can love each other, right? I mean, like, these things used to be considered anathema and all this. And I think that, I mean, you know, as much as I want to concentrate on you know, privacy and all that, if we could get, if people could just learn to accept differences and learn to accept, you know, people's choices, as long as they're not harming somebody else, I think a lot of the, you know, a lot of these technologies would largely be meaningless, because it would kind of go back to the fact that, would it be held against you, you know, would what you thought of or what you did, would it be held against you in court? Well, no, because people don't think it's wrong anymore, you know? I mean, that's, you're really on to something there. Yeah.
Well, this is what I you know, the reason I'm so concerned, and I wanted to have you on, I think I talked to you about, I don't know if I told you about the Arizona Pirate Party thing. I told you about that, didn't I?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this, we're, you know, making progress on that. You go to ArizonaPiratePartyPirateParty.com, you kind of see some, that's not even the art that we're finalizing, but you kind of get the rough idea of, you know, different categories. And that's why I wanted to have Virgil on. I'm going, you know, we're talking about decentralization of emergency services, transportation, and even labor, you know, Liberty Labor app or something. You know, I'm going, you start doing this and you demonstrate that you're making, you know, the collective, the status, the state obsolete. They don't go quietly into that good night. They don't like, right. Man, you're freaking, you know, you're a catapulter, man. They got videotape of you winging cats into cactuses or something. I mean, they gotta make you look bad before you even get started. And it's interesting, Virgil comes from Romania. He was there protesting in the street, and they took Ceausescu out and shot him. And I'm going, yeah. You went through this, man. Don't tell me it doesn't happen. Seriously. Security, what I wanted to focus on. What are some of the things that I can do? Because I am not a big, I'm a big privacy advocate. I don't do it. And the reason is because I'm just like, you know, it's too much work. I really don't care. And I'm just like, I don't trust it anyway. I'm not as skilled in to think I'm private. Every time everybody thinks they weren't, you know, you get sucked into that false sense of security. But now that we're getting into where things are going to start getting interesting, and we're going to go to the decentralized internet, we are going to have a lot of capabilities in our pocket. So I'm going, all right, what are some good security features and things that we should look at?
Sure. Yeah, I think there's some great stuff that's either just recently come out or has more recently gotten very popular, or, you know, has been around maybe even for a little while. There's great solutions. I mean, just great solutions, as great as they can be. I mean, nothing there. You know, there is such a thing as perfect mathematical security. Like, I mean, you know, math is at some point effectively unbreakable. However, there's no like real perfect implementation. So you always, you know, you always want to be extra careful in anything that you're doing and anything you're choosing as far as security goes. But I mean, you know, there's fantastic apps as far as communicating goes. I mean, something that has just been on fire lately, really ever since the beginning of November, and you can imagine why. The use of the Signal app is, as far as securing communications, that includes voice and texting. I mean, this is the gold standard. This is, and it's gone up just in November. It went up in usage 400%. So I'm glad people are on board with this sort of thing, because this is exactly, you know, what you want to be using. And it needs to be, and what's more interesting, what's happening is, again, getting back to the social mores and social norms, is it's becoming fashionable now. Because people are so scared to death of Washington, D.C., you know, or at least starting in 2017, they are, you know, it's becoming fashionable to want to encrypt things, to want to hide things. Awesome. That's exactly what you need. You know, I've said this many times. Encryption needs to be seen as sexy. Like, I mean, that should be treated as, I mean, it'd be wonderful if some gals or some guys are like, wait a minute, you're not messaging me with Signal. I'm not dating you. You know,
right. That'd you know, be awesome. This is one thing. I remember what prompted me to want to have you on. Last week, I was listening to your show, and you're talking about WhatsApp, and that WhatsApp was based on signals software in some way. And then there was different levels that, well, then I was going on about something about this, and I got a text from Will Pangman. And Will, you know, is over at Airbits, or was, last I checked. And Will says, Ernie, well, haven't you heard of WhatsApp or Signal? And I go, look, we did a story on WhatsApp one time on the site, and a good friend of mine and supporter, we were on vacation with him, and he's like, yeah, you know, put you on my WhatsApp list if you get the WhatsApp. And I go, you know that got bought up by Facebook, right? Hey, man, I saw it on Freedom's Phoenix. So then I'm going, look, man, I got to be more clear. And just because I put something up there doesn't mean it's an endorsement. And right. WhatsApp, I go, yes. And I've been, you know, Paul Play over at Airbits, he's like, yep, WhatsApp's great, man, end-to-end encryption, and for sure and always end-to-end encryption. And I'm going, yeah, that may be very well so, but they know who I'm encrypting with, and that's like 90% of what I don't want them to know anyway, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and actually WhatsApp is a real concern. It's true, yes, WhatsApp is using the Signal protocol as its end-to-end encryption, but I mean, the whole Facebook WhatsApp thing, I mean, it's such a mess. I think there's already evidence that Facebook can see, or at least, I mean, you're getting what's called metadata, of course, where it's the data about data. And a lot of that, really, Facebook has become this incredible honeypot. And so if you're using WhatsApp, that data is getting shared with Facebook, and they can just interconnect that with all of Facebook's other services. And regardless of perhaps how good the encryption is, and like I said about implementation, that's something. Not every implementation of the Signal protocol is 100%, is as good as Signal itself, as just, you know, the raw app from OpenWhisper Systems. But there have been cases where it would appear that people using WhatsApp with the end-to-end encryption were still caught. Now, these were terrorist cases, and obviously I don't want anybody getting hurt or anything, but it does highlight the fact, I think it was in Belgium or something, but it highlights the fact that no, WhatsApp is nowhere near at the quality of, say, you know, other options that are out there. So you're right. It's important to really do due diligence on and bringing up the point like, okay, who owns this company? That's a great question to ask about anything that comes out, you know? So yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Okay, well, I'm looking at openwhispersystems.org or whispersystems.org, and first guy there is Edward Snowden. Snowden, use anything by OpenWhisper Systems. So saith Edward Snowden. Oh, and Laura Poitras, which did the documentary on him, you know, the Citizen Four, and she was the reporter that was in the room with Greenwald and all that kind of stuff. She's like, oh, yeah, Signal. Got to do Signal. I'm going, all right, why? What's so great about Signal?
So yeah, as far as what's great about it, I mean, the implementation that it uses is really good. I mean, first off, like, again, you know, who's running this? Who's developing it? Well, you know, I think that's a fair question to ask a lot of times as well. And it's being run by Moxie Marlin Spike, who is pretty much openly an anarchist. I don't think, you know, you're going to be able to do much against that guy, or at least, you know, they've already had. In fact, I mean, honestly, it's been proven already because the NSA, or, you know, the U.S. government will say the DOJ has gone knocking at the door of Signal, and Signal, you know, handed them over stuff, but they handed over practically nothing, because the only thing Signal collects about you is the last time that you logged on and when you created your account. That's now, those are, yes, those things can be used against you, but there's really nothing that doesn't give you some kind of data. Like, even if you wanted to use, you know, PGP for email and all that, you're still going to kind of know that because, you know, when did the email get sent, and you know when the email address was created. So that's kind of like the least amount of information, I think, that you could get out there in, you know, using any digital technology. So that was done right. When the DOJ came, you know, that just kind of proves how Signal is set up in the right way to where nothing of any real substance could get handed over. I mean, maybe they could do something with that bit of information, but it's nowhere near compared to, like, what, say, WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger or anything like that. I mean, the amount of information that could get handed over as far as that goes.
Well, so how does this Signal encryption work then? If they don't see who I'm connecting with, how does it get to them? And then, of course, I imagine encrypting the actual message is not as big a deal. I mean, they've been doing that since forever. But I'm going, okay, so you have a connection between you and someone, and I'm going, All right, how did that happen? And my other thing is, I'm always, you know, I'm the, you know, freaking, I don't know, conspiratorial. I'm just not an idiot. And I go, look, if they can see what's on my screen, if they can actually, I mean, I'm sitting here doing, pushing buttons, and they can see, if they can see, if they can see what's on my display, they can see it, then they can see it. I mean, I don't know what you're thinking, how secret you're going to be if they can see what's on my screen as I'm doing it.
Sure, absolutely. So that's a great point to bring up. And in fact, something that I've been kind of rallying for, that I think the way that Google has the Play Store set up and that Apple has the App Store set up, this might not be possible, unfortunately. I mean, it could be, you know, someone could build an independent app outside of those app stores and they could do it. But one of the things I've really been pushing for, yeah, I mean, if they can see your screen, yeah, of course, you know, it's kind of over, right? Or the other thing that's a little more interesting is the keyboard, where, you know, you have a touchscreen keyboard. You know, all of that could be keylogged and, yep, you know, and sent off to whoever, right? So I've really pushed for having in-app keyboards that, you know, would effectively, like you would know, would be encrypted client-side and perhaps that the OS couldn't read. Could we ever know that 100%? That's really not possible. So again, it's an issue of, like, can we make it expensive for them? Like, and I think Signal is one of those cases where it does make it at least that next level harder, you know, for, you know, they, them, those, as you like to call it, you know, to see what you're doing and to know what you're doing.
Well, you know, as I'm doing, I'm looking at Signal Private Messenger needs access too. And I could push accept here. I agree. I totally agree. You know, and I'm agreeing to what? Device and app history. Yay. Identity, calendar, contacts, location, SMS, phone, photos, media, files, camera, microphone, Wi-Fi connection, device ID, and call. I'm going, damn, there's nothing. Hell, there's more on here than WhatsApp. I mean, you know, what am I giving up here?
Yeah, so part of that, and I'm not like, again, I'm not a you know, just fanboying on Signal, but part of the problem there is that Google is, and I think they do this on purpose, is that they are very vague in what those permissions actually are. Like when it says it needs access to your microphone, well, it allows for voice calling. So of course it needs to do that, right? You know, or if you want to text somebody a photo, yep, it needs access to your photo folder. However, you know, there's the potential that within those very, very broad descriptions of permissions that it needs, that there could be some kind of malicious intent. And I appreciate that fact, like that there could be, you know, some of those permissions could be allowing for all kinds of crazy things. For example, Facebook Messenger asks for even more than that. But one of the, when it says it needs to access your microphone, what Facebook Messenger actually lets you do, now, not everything that asks for permission for your microphone can do this,
turns
but
it
Facebook
on,
Messenger
yeah.
can, it actually can call with your phone. Like it can make a phone call for you without you even telling it to. Now, what's that going to get used for? I mean, that's, in my opinion, that's scary as hell. You know, so part of the problem there is that the permissions are very vague in what they're actually allowing something to do. They could be doing all that and it could be totally benign. But, you know, then there's others where it could be very malicious.
Well, who are these guys?
Potentially malicious.
Well, who's Whisper Systems? I got Snowden say, yeah, anything open Whisper Systems does, yeah, you go there, it's all good. And then that's right where the bad guys go and take over, right? That's right when they do it. They did it with Lava Bit. They do it with whatever. And if Lava hadn't came out open, they would have been running the damn thing. Hell, they even had, you know, corrupt law enforcement running Silk Road. I mean, you know, and then taking all the money. And so I'm looking here. It says verify your phone number to connect with Signal. All right, there it is. Registration transmits some contact information to the server. It is not stored, so saith them. Some information. All right, I registered. There, I registered because freaking Brian said. Double check that this is your number. We're about to verify it with an SMS. Continue. All right. I totally agree. Signal will now automatically verify. There it comes. Number with a confirmation SMS. This could take a moment. Be patient. Yada, yada, yada. So it's registering with the server. I don't know. A whole bunch of registering going on. I'm wondering, this decentralized, I know you're keeping up on Made Safe and other things like that. How close are we to having a decentralized internet? I don't have to worry about any of this crap.
Oh boy. well, in some ways it's already here. There's a couple of, there's other projects that already exist and have existed for some time and use really the best encryption that's available or that's able to get implemented easily, I guess you could say. There's software called RetroShare, which I'm a huge fan of, but I can't get anybody else to use, but it's kind of easy to set up, but it's not like, you know, click and press a couple buttons, kind of like you were with Signal, right? What really needs to happen to allow for that internet, I think more so than anything, is the idea of mesh networking needs to become a whole lot more commonplace. And recently, the newest version of Bluetooth, which I think it's in 4.2 that they started implementing this, and it's definitely going to be a part of Bluetooth 5.0, is allowing for, like its concentration is on mesh networking. Now, it's not like the Bluetooth organization is somehow interested in freeing people or anything like that. They're building in mesh networking because they want Internet of Things devices to be able to communicate. However, that same technology with the right software could be used to create this decentralized internet that can bounce, you know, all over the place and potentially all around the world. And, you know, who's going to shut it down when it doesn't have a central point of failure, right? So I think we're getting a lot closer because now a very popular technology like Bluetooth is. Bluetooth gets put into every single device you can imagine, from the computer to a phone to a watch. With that coming out, I think that is going to make this a lot more viable. People are just going to have to be able to take advantage of it.
Okay, what do you mean it makes it more viable having all these different devices? What are you saying?
Well, because people they won't need to buy a separate device. They'll automatically have like this newest version of Bluetooth, you know, a couple of years down the line. I mean, it's already getting put into some devices, but for it to be like really widespread, you know, it will already be built into all of these devices, and so people could actually use it. For example, and this is something I'm surprised hasn't really happened yet, but there is, and I'm not saying to trust this app or anything, but there's an app called FireChat. And it originally came out for iOS devices. It came out for iPhone because iPhone had built into it what's called MHCP, which something like that. It was multi-peer connectivity framework, so MPCF, sorry. And that allowed for two iPhones to communicate without any other radio signal whatsoever. You know, no cellular, not even really Bluetooth necessarily. It used certain bands, but I mean, it allowed for devices to work with each other without any internet. And I'm shocked that Apple hasn't really taken advantage of that, and only a few apps really have, kind of like the aforementioned FireChat, where you could, you know, it was being used at protests and everything because people, no matter what the government did to shut things down, they'd have to literally turn off their phone. Not saying they couldn't do that, but, you know, the ability existed for people to communicate without relying upon some kind of central form of communication being a Wi-Fi signal, like a Wi-Fi tower or a cell tower or, you know, hard line or whatever.
Yeah, let me give some application for that, how that came about. I remember it was like, 4 or 5 years ago, Open Garden was the beginning of that. And when Open Garden came on, we had, you know, I had it was Paige Peterson. You know, she came on. Yeah. She was talking about that. We met us the first time we met her at Pork Fest. And then I'm like, she couldn't answer some of the technical stuff. So eventually we got the Russian guy to come on and explain it to us. So I had the developer come on. We talked about it. And you could see that his philosophy got in the way of its success, because from each according to their ability to each according to their need kind of thing. Because the idea was is that I have Verizon on my phone. I go to Pork Fest. It probably had a better signal than most at the time there. And I had access to the Wi-Fi. I opened up Open Garden. Anybody that was on Open Garden could use my access to the internet on my phone. Well, within about a nano moment, all my data was gone. Okay. So I go,
right.
Okay. So that's kind of what I figured was going to happen. But, you know, if you had free access or you logged into a Wi-Fi that didn't have it, you know, that probably would have worked better. What it did is it allowed for people to connect to a phone and then use the resources of that phone to browse the internet and do whatever. Okay, that's kind of an interesting idea, but no, I think I'll decline. Well, that went to FireChat, and its biggest use that I remember was when they were having the democratic protest of whatever going on in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, right. You had gazillions of people in the street, and then what did they want to do? Well, China, man, they don't have a problem with flipping a switch and you're off. You know, we just turn it off, you know, the internet and you're done. Well, they were doing their little flash mob and moving around and logistics of and everything because they had fire chat that allowed them to communicate directly from phone to phone to phone to phone to phone to phone. And when you got hundreds of thousands of people in the street, everybody was connected because it was connecting from phone to phone. So I see that's the idea of a mesh network. And then, of course, mycelium, that's kind of their whole mindset from the beginning, even before they did Bitcoin wallets, is they wanted to be able to have the hardware to mesh phones. Now we got Elon Musk going to put up 4,000 and whatever little Mini Cooper satellites up there and kind of, we got the whole planet, and there's a big giant mesh for you right there. So this is going to happen. It's going to be in such a way that your system is the device and not some central DARPA's we rule everything. How far off am I?
No, I think you're right. I mean, that's really it. But that's the thing, is that these technologies that allow for that kind of communication, for mesh networking and all that, like, I think they need to be kind of slipped in on people. Like, they need to not even know they have it, and then suddenly they find out that there's an app that uses it, and then they're like, whoa, holy crap, I'm going to start using this.
Freedom, right? There's an app for that.
Kind of like Signal, same idea. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying Freedom, there's an app for that.
That's right, yeah. I love that.
You know, that's one thing. That's one reason why I wanted to talk to you. When I advocate and we start doing, I'm going to need your help in the population of each of the categories and so on as we do this pirate thing. And I'm going, what I'm really wanting to do is I want to emphasize the options and opportunity for you to decentralize off of the man's grid of whatever the hell it is. And that includes, and what's the most centralizing feature any and everybody has, is their freaking smartphone that they're walking around with. They are plugged in. Might as well just stick it in a slot in the back of their head. So I'm going, you know, if you start getting Generation Next in the mindset of, look, it can be a tool. It doesn't have to be a leash. I mean, you can, if you think about it the right way and you know what applications to download and what services to use and how to use the internet, what operating system, and decentralized or whatever, you start thinking that way, all of a sudden you're going to see there's going to be an enormous market for this. And it's going to be, the man's going to keep getting small. Government's going to be that woo-wah car that's following us, and they're just going to slip over the horizon in our rearview mirror, and we're going to forget they were ever even freaking there. You know, it's like, they just go out, you know? So tell me about, you know, some of the sovereign tech issues that you're covering, and certainly on decentralized internet. How close are we with that? I mean, you know, made safe. I've been sitting here waiting on the edge of my seat. What are we looking at?
Yeah. So, as far as how much longer and like the things that I've covered, again, I see, I really think it comes down to that mindset you're talking about, Ernie. I mean, people could just need to know why it's a good idea to use this sort of thing. I really think a lot of the technologies already exist. I mean, MadeSafe, you know, thankfully they came out with their alpha, you know, just a few months ago, and that's good. And I hope to see, you know, kind of more come from that. But I mean, there's ZeroNet, there's a few other technologies out there that are making, you know, that are really taking advantage, or, you know, giving you the ability to do this.
ZeroNet. Wait. You tell me another one. You got me another one there. Another one you said in ZeroNet, and I haven't heard about it, and you're not telling me what? What?
Yeah. So there's ZeroNet, which works kind of like BitTorrent. I mean, it's sort of an amalgamation of different technologies. But it is something that's already out there. People already make blogs and web pages on it. They do file sharing to a degree. There's encrypted email, and it, once you get it set up, like, the setup isn't exactly point and click. At least last time I checked, and maybe it's been a few months since I've checked on it. But that is something that works. I've sent people messages with it. I mean, and you know, they're doing all the right encryption and all of that. So that's there. Of course, the part of the problem is, though, yes, it's a decentralized internet in a way. You know, again, kind of like, how do you define decentralization? But it's still piggybacking off of the infrastructure that we know of as the internet. As to where, for me, you know, where I get more excited is when we are not reliant upon that infrastructure that could effectively have a cutoff switch. So yeah, so there's ZeroNet that's out there. Like I said, there's RetroShare, that's another one that's out there. Some of these technologies really already exist, and they could work within smaller networked areas very well in the way that I think you and I want.
Well, what are you thinking about the satellite opportunity? Here comes, I mean, you know, of course, Facebook wants to do a plane and Google a blimp, and it's on their internet. Oh, yeah, it's free Wi-Fi to the internet of Facebook. And I'm going, oh, yay, can't wait to sign up for that one, you know. But the you have, well, you don't know. You know, Elon Musk may even, heck, I don't know. You know, Virgin Galactic wants to use CubeSats, and they're going to, so there may be all of a sudden within the next 5 years a doubling of however many satellites. They need to start taking some down or something. But you know, I'm going, you have all this capability to go straight up, and I'm going, is what am I looking for in that as far as the hardware and the software? Is that going to free me? Is it going to enslave me more? What are the opportunities you've been checking?
Yeah, well, I don't really trust Elon Musk in anything that he does. I mean, that's just my personal take on him. I see he's one of those guys I kind of mentioned when I first came on today that, like, there's a lot of between the line stuff that, no, these companies aren't lying to you, but they're also not telling you a lot of things. Yeah. And I feel like Elon Musk is one of those guys that doesn't tell you. Because particularly, like, with self-driving cars.
Yeah, I want to know they hit the Minority Report.
For Tesla, right?
They hit the Minority Report button, and all of a sudden, I'm delivered to the man.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, great analogy. I mean, but, you know, there's that issue of it. But then there's also just the issue of is that, you know, most engineers in the self-driving car space will tell you that the only way self-driving cars are really going to work to where, you know, it fits within the margins that are, you know, margins of error that are acceptable is if everybody's in a self-driving car. That is absolutely unacceptable to me. Like, no way. You know, if I want to choose to get rid of my steering wheel, fine. But I don't, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, forcibly have to give it up. And so yeah, I mean, but you never hear that from Elon, that that's what's actually going to be necessary, right? So when it comes to, say, the CubeSats or, you know, satellite internet and all of this, I haven't really heard yet. I haven't seen yet where they've talked about the issues of latency. Because satellite internet is already a thing. I mean, you know, if you're on a yacht or if you're on some cruise or something, largely you're using satellite internet after a fashion. However, the problem is that when you're trying to get through, you know, the various aspects of our atmosphere, you start to lose signal. You run into latency issues. Now, how you can solve this, one of the ways you can solve this is by, if you use drones, okay? And drones are like a middleman that, you know, connect from, say, the CubeSat, then that information gets to the drone, and then the drone can send a much purer product down, you know, to wherever you are on Earth. So my thing is with this is that really it's not very cost effective. You know, even getting aside from privacy or, you know, who's in control of the satellites, blah, blah, blah. It's really not a cost effective way to do things, as to where I think mesh networking, where you're just bouncing Bluetooth signals or some other protocol, you know, between devices, and it's already built into the device. That's really the way to go, because then you're not worrying about, you know, having this middleman of a drone, and you're not having to, you know, launch up stuff into space. So I haven't really been convinced of why this is such a great idea yet.
Well, you know, my thing is,
I see a lot of problems.
Well, my thing is that you know, for mesh, you have to be, it's more urban environment. You got to be next to somebody that has a phone. I mean, you know, that's next to somebody that has a phone, that somebody has internet access. And the satellite, that covers everything. Plus, you get to have your own, and get $1.95 from, you know, 4 billion people, and I'm, you know, like, filthy, stinking rich. So this is, there's a lot of motivation there. I did check on the latency, and my ping now at Cox Cable on a good day is I get 20 milliseconds, you know, for it to, you know, connect. Well, they're going faster than 20 milliseconds on the satellite, because it's only 400, 500 miles up. They're not going geosynchronous. That's why they need so many. And then the other thing is they're going, you know, a gig up and download. And I'm going, or more, you know, 20 gig and crap they're talking about. That's why they need to, you know, instead of a CubeSat, get like a Mini Cooper thing. And I'm going, you know, damn. So that kind of answers that. I mean, it's going to be high speed of, you know, whip ass. But I'm just, it's like what you say. It's like, who do you trust? And I'm just
right.
And the I tell you the one reason why I lost a whole bunch of I'm feeling good about this is the first thing he does. I don't know if it was a PR move or what, but he asked permission from the FCC. I'm like, screw them. You know, what if I'm out of Guatemala, man? I'm asking the FCC. They can suck it. I don't give a crap what they say. So that's kind
well,
of
well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing too, is that Elon Musk, like most of his businesses, rely on heavy duty government subsidies. Now you could say any business relies on that, but he in particular, like, I mean, he is egregious in how much government money he takes. So I worry about him, and I'm still, you know, that's interesting that, you know, that they're going for the lower, and I think I had heard that they were going for a lower orbit effectively, but that's still, I don't see it as cost-effective a solution as say, I mean, there's other technologies too. There's Li-Fi, which is, laser wireless effectively. Yeah. Now that requires a degree of line of sight, but even that they're kind of working around. I just think there's much easier solutions than going with all these satellites.
Well, we're going to find out because it's all going to come down to somebody's got some money. You know,
because
I got money. If you can get somebody to do some money. And the fact that he's raised so much on doing all his other crap, you know. And the one thing on the subsidy thing, I really paid attention to that. And it was like, hey, man, I'm for doing away with all the subsidies right after you do away with all the oil subsidies. <You know? laughs> So I'm like, all right. So right now, when you're looking at a decentralized internet, are you on pins and needles waiting for something? Is it close, or are you, it's not quite here yet, we shouldn't worry about it, there's something I should be paying attention to? Where are we at?
I think the thing that really is going to put it over the top is that new version of Bluetooth, and then one of these apps that really they already exist and they just need to take advantage of it, but that's what they do, is they take advantage of it and then it becomes practical. To really use that. That's what I'm looking for to really happen. And then the other thing is the mindset, is just making it cool, making this whole idea of, not handing everything over to a server and all that, somehow getting people to understand that, hey, that's awesome, And I'm not saying I know how to make it cool or anything, but that's really the area that I think needs that improvement. And but interestingly, that's really all we're waiting for. A lot of the other stuff is here.
Okay, now let me I downloaded the Signal and I waited for this one thing to ask you. It says use as default SMS app. Tap to make Signal your default SMS. So Signal, it can be my work like a regular text app with people that don't have Signal.
Yeah, it can, right. It can take over as your SMS, like it can take over for your stock messenger, SMS messaging app that's in your phone. If you didn't hit it yet, I wouldn't hit that. I generally don't set that up to where and you can turn it off too if you already did hit it. But,
no, I'm waiting. But while I was waiting, I got Nick Dark Cloud, he's like, welcome to the future. And Doug Scribner, yo, what's up? I'm going, well, that was secret.
So
I'm like, I didn't even push the damn button yet, and they're already, seriously.
Well, if I can, Ernie, let me address this because this is something that isn't like perfect, but there's a reason for it. Okay. The fact that, so like, as soon as you get Signal and you install it, like the permission said that you read off, it asks for your contacts. So it knows, who your contacts are. And if they share Signal, it lets them know that you're now on Signal, right? Now, the thing is that, and people have a right to understand this or a right to criticize this, is that, hey, it uses my phone number. That's kind of a centralized database. That sucks. Like, that's not very private, which is what you just encountered, right, Ernie?
Right. Well, much as it is.
So, but here's the thing, is that using a phone number is just the easiest method of authentication between two devices. And that's why it does that. I agree, it's not the way I'd like things to go. I'd love it if they could use usernames something else. But there is actually kind of a good reason that it's that way. And it makes it the most, that's what gives you your just button, is using the phone number. So, it is funny. Like, as soon as you get on, everybody suddenly knows. I probably just got a notification now, and I just don't have my phone with me to look at it. So, welcome to Ernie.
Okay, then I got somebody here. Say, hey, Ernie, how did I work my way into your contacts? Is this the Ernie Hancock of Freedom's Phoenix and Declare Your Independence? You know, tell Donna I said hi, and this guy in some country, if I don't even know who this guy is. Let me see. South Compton, Twin Mountain Country Store. Oh, it's a country store guy from Twin Mountain by Rogers Campground. What? I go, you know, this is, all right, man. You told me to do Signal, and there it is. You know, yeah. I'm like, hello.
If I can, or go ahead.
I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm glad we did this live on the radio. I just want people to understand if when they put all these permissions and you're doing it through a Play Store and you got, I mean, you're not really, yes, you can have access to all my whatever. And the same thing happens with WhatsApp. Same thing happens with Signal. And the big thing that I was concerned with was not so much, what do you think that, you know, something happens around the world, around here or whatever, you know, what does the man think I'm going to be saying to people? You know, something about that, or I'm going to have something. And what I'm really worried about is whom I'm saying it to. You know, to whom am I communicating? You know, maybe that's the one thing I don't want them to know. You know, so I'm like, seriously, I've had like Boston Tea Party. Boston, he's all about privacy. He wrote a book about it and privacy or whatever. And one time he got these calling cards and he calls me and I recognized, you know, I didn't get the phone in time and I see the number and I called it back and he goes, how'd you get this number? I go, it was a caller ID. He goes, are you kidding me? This is one of these, you know, super number call things supposed to, my girlfriends, they didn't know and kind of, well, that didn't work, you know? So you got to really know more about it to understand. I had talked to Derek and some of the other guys about this one thing. I said, you know, is there any way to have to where they can't see what's going on my screen? They can't have access to me. They can't do it. What would it take? And it'd have to be its own separate device, like a Raspberry Pi with the open source of kind of whatever the hell. Then it gets to the point to where, well, hell, you might as well have to go to ham radio. You got to broadcast it from somewhere. And then the only people that can decrypt it are the ones that have the private key, but they have to be in a broadcast mode that everybody gets it from everywhere and only you can read it or something. You know, where are we going to get to the perfect, you know, what I got to do? Come whisper in your ear? And then they hear it through the brain chip they got on you and the Matrix style of whatever. I mean, damn. Feel me?
Yeah, no, I agree and I understand completely. In fact, I mean, so I have a website called Dark Android. It's the darkandroid.info is the website for it. And the very first kind of chapter or section in it is about anonymity. How to personally achieve anonymity, not with your electronic device, but with you. How do you interact with the digital world and continue to be anonymous? Because I agree, like the only way that like you can really be certain about this is you have a separate device set up, and on that device you are not Ernie Hancock or you are not Brian Sovereign. You are somebody completely different, and you know, and then you kind of go forward with that, setting up different things like, you know, email with PGP, which is still my favorite way to communicate, and thankfully that's become a lot easier in really just in the past year. So I totally understand that that's kind of necessary. I mean, I think the solutions, ironically, like, yeah, the whisper in the ear, it kind of almost takes that. Like, I mean, and this is an old idea, and it has a name that some people will laugh at, but it's called the key party. Now, it's not like the key parties in the 70s. Those are great. I'm not saying they're not, but you know, the key party is where you're actually at a, you know, you're at a meeting with people and you actually do share your, you know, your private keys and or your keys and fingerprints with each other, effectively your new digital fingerprints, say like with PGP. And that sort of thing, I guess I feel like maybe everybody at Porkfest just kind of has to confirm with each other or something. Like, that's really, I can't imagine how any other way that it's going to work. That doesn't mean that that's not possible. I just don't, know how that would end up, looking, what that would look like.
But I think hopefully we're going to find out, you know, a lot of people, you know, that was one thing that with, Virgil, when he comes on, he does, Virgil Vaduva, when he does Cell 411, he was waiting. He had skills. He had the ability. He saw what people were trying to do. And he's like, do I got to do this myself? You know, yes, you do. You know, so he did. Well, what are some of the things that, you know, you're thinking you're going to have to do yourself other than having a freedom-oriented video game where the, you know, the good guys whip ass on the collectivist? I mean, you know, what's some of the projects that you're working on?
So I don't have any projects that are like directly in the, I mean, I am a programmer, but I'm not really working on anything necessarily in the kind of the crypto space or in that sort of thing. I'm definitely happy because I can speak these people's language. I love to highlight them, you know, and let them, you know, let people know that these things are out there and they exist. Like a recent project that I'm very excited about that's now out in the world is Zcash, which I actually, last week's show, I had Paige Peterson on, and we talked about that for a good long while. And this is, I mean, just a phenomenal, you know, this is that anonymous Bitcoin that people have been wanting for years. So Zcash is an interesting thing. So, you know, I don't have anything like directly that I'm working on, but I love to keep an eye on the space and let people know, you know, what's coming out and what's happening.
I got to tell you something.
Go ahead.
Here's something that you'll like. I had, what the hell? God dang it. Peter Schiff. Okay, Peter Schiff was on yesterday. I had Ron Paul on this morning, too. So yesterday I get Peter Schiff on, and we start getting off into gold money. Have you seen gold money or money gold or gold money, I think it is.
Let me see. Mm-mm. No, I don't think I have.
Okay. This is good. Now, I thought it was the same thing that, you know, he had been going on about when you did a credit card and it, you know, you had an account with them and it was in money and you would transfer grams of gold as you spent your Visa kind of thing. But it was only available to those that weren't U.S. citizens. So I'm just like, yeah, you know, well, screw all y'all, you know. So then comes up with gold money and Europac kind of worked with. Anyway, it comes down to this. I go in and in 5 minutes I opened up an account and I funded it a couple hundred dollars with a debit card from my bank. Boom, there it is. And I choose where I want my gold stored, you know, Zurich, Singapore, Hong Kong, whatever. So it goes into a Brink storage that they have and, you know, webcam, third party, pinky swear, it's here kind of thing. But they have, you know, 1.3 million account holders. They got 1.2 billion in assets and there's a 8 billion transaction volume already. So I'm going, okay, I'm interested. Let's go take a look at it. Well, of course, Peter Schiff is talking it up. I go in, and how you use it is you get a MasterCard, and wherever you can spend MasterCard, it debits your gold holdings, turns it into cash, and sends them cash. If they have an account, like I am, you know, a gold money, I got, you know, here, I, you know, give me money, I can put the option that I don't get it in fiat or dollars or euros or any of the other currencies it has. I get it in a transfer of gold from their account to mine. So I go, okay.
Wow. Okay.
I'm like, okay. Well, just like with Cell 411, they're coming after you too. I mean, you know, there's no way that they're going to allow this to go. Well, of course, it has increase in value of the gold. You know, you're going to pay, I don't know, the tax man of you made whatever, you know. But the point is that I'm not really looking at it. I'm going to be making money with this. It's another option of being able to get off of the system because they don't have a Visa credit card that I know of that I can spend that deducts Bitcoin. I haven't really seen that. Have you?
There's a couple. I don't know their names off the top of my head, but I know there's a couple companies that have tried this sort of thing. In any case, but that is amazing. Like,
just go look at it. Goldmoney.com.
Gold money?
Goldmoney.com. I already did. It's $37.31 a gram. You know, now in U.S. And when you buy in, they only charge you 0.5% to buy the gold. And I'm going,
wow.
Well, hell, there's a reason right there. Now, the big problem is, of course, I don't have physical possession of it. Okay. So I guess you can do that too. You can do whatever, you know, that's, you know, deeper in. But, you know, my thing is, I go, all right, this is what I want to test. If I want to decentralize myself from their money, I can't use Bitcoin for everything. You know, that's another thing. At Paul Playon, I did, did their $500 minimum if I went and kind of whatever so I can have one say. Okay, this is my say. I go, tell you what I want. Let me tell you what I want. I want every time that I use Bitcoin, it automatically goes to my Glidera account, whatever, and refunds whatever Bitcoin that I used. I go, because I use Bitcoin because it's so easy. The problem is I spend all my Bitcoin, you know? So I'm going, I need to, as I'm using it, I want to keep my Bitcoin. I want to keep it up. So I may not, I'm not like making money or saving money. That's not the point. I like to keep my Bitcoin as it's sitting there as I'm using it. You know, I lose a percent or two as I'm using it and they refund it or whatever. I'm good with that. I don't care, you know, especially if I'm letting a Matel probe me through Glidera anyway. But I'm going, is that an option? Okay, maybe, that'll come in. Well, I'm going the same thing with the gold. I go, can I replenish my gold? I put on there and say every day, every 7 day, every 30, I put in however many days I want, that it automatically just takes from my bank account and just buys a couple $100 worth of gold or $1,000 or $2,000, whatever. So I'm going, all right. So I go to Donna. How many bills do we pay, with a credit card? Well, it's a phone bill and this bill and that bill and the whatever bill, the bill. And I go, well, I'll put that much in gold in this account and you pay with that MasterCard, and I just took the dollar out of the equation and we're moving around gold and they can suck it. Boom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Boom. Boom. So I had Peter on for 2 hours yesterday talking. I go, all right, now explain this to me. I'm not believing you entirely here. So what you're saying is, you listened to yesterday's show, this gold money thing. What it did is it turned gold into Bitcoin.
Okay, I'll listen to it, but how did that like explain that? What?
Well, no, I mean the features of Bitcoin. It made it easy.
Yeah, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah, okay.
But even then, I could go to Roberts and Roberts. And I just take my Bitcoin and have it turned into gold. Or here, I can have my gold and turn into Bitcoin. Or kind of, it turns gold into useful digital online money with a credit card, and it immediately deducts what my holdings are. How decentralized is that?
Well, if anything, love the signal that as much sends. As it can it's like be. Just the fact that, what that says, it's like, no, this, I am spending gold, here. And I think that is such a huge statement to make, regardless even of setup, that is awesome.
Well,
I'm not spending USD. I'm spending gold, baby. I like that.
Well, if you're a taxi driver, that was another thing, talking to Cell 411, they're starting to do rides. I'm going, all right. Well, and even Schiff said that. He goes, if you're a taxi driver, why wouldn't you want gold? Well, right. There's a lot of reasons. But, I'm sure there's somebody, they have one of these accounts. You can pay, with Cell 411 Connect, they're going, you can take whatever money you want for however much and the discount of bad. I said, you give me gold, you get a freaking discount. Silver, discount. Bitcoin, discount. Cash, not so much. See, this is happening. This is the point why I wanted to do, these shows with you guys and do the pirate thing, is because so many people don't know. They don't know how close we are. I tell you how I see it. It's when Walmart will never go out of business. Walmart, the big buy, they're too big to fail. Never going to. And I'm going, man, you guys don't understand. They're on such a tight margin. That even a little bit, here in Arizona, they just passed an initiative that raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And I go, what robot company, funded that one, okay? Because what's going to happen. Everybody and their grandma is going to be replaced with a robot if they can, as soon as they can. Better be learning how to fix robots or buy a robot, go work for you,
Yeah.
So I'll buy me a Tesla car and you can go drive people around and you can haul them to the jail, all right? So I'm going, all right, I vote that we have, money that you can't track of all this stuff that I'm going to be doing anyway, and here's some gold. And I can see the promotion of this decentralization of a way of life having way more impact on these big box or the big government or the big system, because they're on such a tight 1-3% margin, even a little bit of shift, and all of a sudden the insurers go out of business.
I think you're absolutely right. It's kind of the same principle that if people didn't buy a new TV this year, Samsung would be out of business. that's literally how tight they run. So you're right.
Yeah, so I'm feeling, and that's one thing on VR. I saw the early adapters doing that. I'm going, I went to. Have you ever put on a VR rig?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, how are they now? A year or two ago, I went to Consumer Electronics Show, and you got like all it is just, you know, two images on a screen or on your phone, and then you got magnifying glasses that you so you can look right at it, and you're getting this 3D effect. But the pixels are so it's like a magnifying glass on your TV screen that I'm seeing pixels. I mean, are they getting tighter resolution? Is it getting better? Or am I pixelated all the time?
No, a lot of that's getting solved. A lot of that is really getting solved. And also, actually, I mean, one of the interesting things that, people have discovered, you know, after so much use of VR, now that it's sort of permeating, is that, you know, like photorealism isn't actually required for people to want to have a great experience in virtual reality. So, yeah, the pixel issue is getting solved, and partly it's getting solved because they don't. No one's really feeling as great a need to push for photorealism right now, anyway. So, yeah, I think that bug's getting worked out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I'm just I'm going because I did some of the rides and, you know, doing the mountain biking. That's kind of cool, and then all of a sudden I prefer not going over that cliff. But, you know, it lost the realism because you could tell you were in a game. The latency they're starting to, it looks like they got kind of taken care of. But I'm going, God, do I want to get one, you know, on sale after Christmas this year, or am I waiting? Because I always said, you know, I've got decade-old TVs. You know, I got a 42-inch that's at least, God, 6, 7, 8 years old. And I'm going, all right, I get the Q box, Google streaming, whatever. I'm going to get me a Kobe. I'm going to watch any of that, and it doesn't recognize on my TVs. So I'm going, oh, screw you, man. They want me to get a smart, they're going to anal probe me that way anyway. So I'm just, you know, God, you guys are killing me. And I'm wondering, do I wait and I get, you know, something that really works, and then I'm getting anal probed, or do I wait until the next third, fourth generation Snowden-approved VR and Brian Sovereign says it's okay and they're not going to, you know, get into my brain and suck my thoughts out of my head, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I would, unless, like, you really want to be, like in on VR very early, I would wait, because I think you know, the ones that are going to be where it's just the headset itself, I think that's really going to be the future of where a lot of this goes. And those could be handled in such a way to where I think you could handle a lot of the privacy concerns. And also, yeah, I think that almost puts like a small limitation on it that'll maybe keep it from, you know, going too far and maybe even from getting to the NSA with whatever you don't want them to get. So I would hold off a little bit yet for at least another generation or two, maybe.
You know, in the 90s, I had this thought for a short story that I did, and all of a sudden I'm thinking this, I'm going, when this happens, I'm going to know we're screwed. And then you started seeing progress on this, and this was the idea. I'm going, at some point, they're going to have a device that sits on your TV, and it's going to add smell. There's going to be a track that you and all of a sudden later there was a young man out of India that came up with these 5 chemicals that in combination could do almost any smell. So now mm-hmm. they have a like on a movie film, you'll have a track. You know, there's a magnetic. You have the film. You know, the video. Then you have the MP3 or whatever it is. You know, you have the audio, and then you just add another track for smell. Now they have it for surround sound. They're going to have it for 360. I turn my head and view around behind me kind of VR stuff. So I'm going, okay, what happens when they add smell to the battlefield of Braveheart? Now, is that going to add to them? Like, yeah, okay, yeah, that might be kind of cool. But then when they start getting in the smell, then what's going to stop them from, they're already doing a Hertz level of my brain is zombie-eyed watching this damn screen anyway. They start doing smell and have chemicals that trigger different things. And then all of a sudden, I see a Hillary Clinton commercial and I want to have sex with her and vote for her. Then you know something's screwed, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, oh, boy, do I hear you. yeah, there's tons of research on, like, you know, through the use of video and other like sensory technologies to control a narrative in your brain. Like, there's the God helmet, there's all these different things that are, you know, absolutely real. And yeah, I really understand that concern. I mean, and it actually, you know, in a way, I mean, kind of on a funny note, like, it's something I'm running into right now. Like, can you even buy a dumb television anymore? You know, can you buy a television that doesn't have all this crap in it? You know, not even just like smell stuff, but just like all the nonsense that they put into the average television today, you know, even Netflix or something like that. Like, I don't want it. I just want it to be, you know, a dumb tube. I mean, they're not tubes anymore, but, you know, I just want it to be a dumb tube and I'll plug in what I want into it. It's very interesting that is becoming, you know, much harder to find.
Well, I wonder, does anybody, they'll make a market out of it. I'm wondering if it's, you know, JoJo out of South Korea, if we make and you're not surveilled camera of something. Because, you know, here they're, you know, how many times have we had hacks where somebody will hack into somebody's Kinect and they send back signal onto their screen showing, you know, a boy and girlfriend sitting on their couch. Ha-ha. Yeah, this is what right. I can see. And, I mean, literally, this happens. And I'm going, yeah, that makes me warm and fuzzy. And then you got the Google or Amazon Echo or something in there. Hey, Google, find me, get me, do whatever. Even on my phone now, I go, hey, Google. Or okay, Google. Okay, Google. And it goes, yeah, what? Oh, I was sitting here listening the whole time. Oh, I feel better about that. You know? So this is, our world is going to be totally, and I'm wondering, I remember one of the commercials they had, you know, it was four guys in a four-door pickup truck going, and they're looking at their phones, they're like, ah, not yet. They keep driving, they, you know, hill and dale and over the ridge and through a river, and no, not yet. And they go further back and they go, yeah, we made it. They were looking for someplace they didn't have a phone signal. And I go, you know, I feel you. Because remember, years ago, I remember I've been going to Pork Fest, God, almost a decade. But you, I remember one like 7 years ago or something, one of the 8 years, 9 years, it was 08, I think it was when I went to my first one. I go to Pork Fest, and all these young kids were enraptured by the idea that they didn't have any phone signal. They do now, but back then they were like, wow, look. No phone signal. My head's up. I can play. I'm running the grass and actually go do something, you know? And I saw over the years what would happen. Their head started going down more, you know? And they're pretty much kind of a little bit up more. They're not as bad as anywhere else, you know? Everybody's got their head down. But you see what I mean? It's just as we get more and more access to technology, just get sucked right into it, and we need a cultural awareness from Brian Sovereign Tech, you know, to kind of help us what kind of tech should we expose ourselves to, why, and what to look for. That's what I'm hoping you can help us with.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's a huge goal of mine, you know, is to make sure people know, yeah, okay, like what can you use? And I think, you know, again, all these, you know, kind of nightmarish technologies, I think that, you know, that you're describing, that could very much become a reality.
They are now!
Right, if they are not already. Yeah, exactly. you know, all of these things, again, as much as they put it onto people, I think that the powers that be sort of rely, again, and I sort of said this earlier, but they rely on you using them as well. You know, like they're going to rely on you using them, and in that reliance, they are going to rely on them too, you know, as a way to control you or whatever else. There was a great video that got leaked by The Intercept, and it was a Pentagon training video. This was just, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago. And in that, it laid out a nightmare scenario for the U.S. Army, where they said that effectively in 20 years, you know, there's going to be entire, you know, kind of alternative ecosystems of humanity that they won't be able to control because of various technologies that are coming out. Everything's going to be encrypted. They're going to have their own money. They're going to have this. They're going to have that. And when I see that, that's actually when I saw that video, I felt very hopeful because it's like, okay, as long as we can let people know, just don't buy into all this nonsense. Don't buy into this technology or that technology. Then you can hide from the entire system.
What was the name of this video? What would I look for that video?
It was from The Intercept. I could send it to you in a link. I covered it in one of my recent episodes. But
Intercept, NSA future something.
Yeah, Pentagon leaked video, The Intercept. If you type that in, it would probably come up. But it's so funny because, you know, you're watching this video and they're the government's terrified of what the next 20 years is going to look like. But they're making it sound like that you're just going to be overrun by terrorists when it's like, no, like what you're really terrified about is that there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to, you know, realize they don't need you anymore. So I saw it as like a hopeful video, even though it's supposed to be very somber.
Wow. Okay. So Intercept, Pentagon leaked video, and you know, I want to get... You know, because this brings up something. I don't know if I told you this before. back in, God, when we first started doing Freedom's Phoenix in late 05, and it was 06, and Pentagon video warns of unavoidable dystopian future of worlds, cities with the, no, warns of unavoidable dystopian, so, all right, I'll
yeah, that sounds like the one, if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I'll look it up. Well, what happened was, I remember there was a story, and I can't find it anymore. I'm hoping the audience, maybe they can go find this. It was reference to how they interpret data. Well, there was a friend, or a friend of a friend, acquaintance I went over, and that was over at his house, and he had Ferret magazine, you know, on the intel. I go, oh, you got a Ferret? He goes, no. And I go, well, what do you got all these Ferret magazines? Yeah, just to screw with them. He would register, you know, or subscribe to all these weird magazines just to throw the man off to think, God right. knows why, you know? And I'm going, okay, I guess you're in the, with the Ferret people or something. Ferret people, move along, nothing to see here, no terrorists, I have ferrets. Okay. So what happened, this article described all of this kind of data that came in, and in a geographical area, it would depict a topographical 3D kind of map that would show peaks in oh, here's a peak. It'd be like a mountain or a rod, or it would show threats that they based on whatever algorithm or criteria that they put in there. Well, that was in the early 90s. I'm sorry, I remember in the early 2000s they were doing this. You go in and you look at that one person. You go, ah, it's just Ernie, and he said this about that, and it's really not. We got to tweak our algorithm. All right, we don't want to include it because there's too many of these guys. You know, there's too many libertarians, too many voluntarists, too many anarchists. Now, what would, you know, now they tweak it, and all of a sudden everybody's that level. Then you got like a Mesa. You know, it's like Monument Valley. You got all these, you know, big giant groups, geographic, everybody's up here. They're looking for differentiation. What is the base norm now? 10 years ago would have got you a hut, SWAT team, Osama bin Laden must live here. Okay? Well, now the entire country, the entire world, everybody's at the freaking pissed off level of bite me. You know, now they're looking for an even different differentiation. They're looking for a guy that's got, you know, Marvin the Martian with the button of the thermonuclear or whatever the hell. So I'm going, this is how they're interpreting this data. There has to be somebody, something makes a decision, at least hopefully, because if they don't, it's going to be a drone strike of a Hellfire missile on somebody made the wrong phone call and downloaded signal. I mean, you know, I'm like, what the hell? So they keep changing this and seeing that the impression I got from the article is there's so much common general dissatisfaction with government that they can't use that as a criteria, as a threat to they, them, those. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I believe it. I would actually believe that. And I think that's, you know, kind of that, you know, filling in all the signal with a lot of noise. I think that's a great thing to do too. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of, we're just sad. You know, we don't like it none too much. Well, I'm looking at, I tell you what my big focus is, and all the stuff that I do kind of goes towards this. And it's an original project, it's called Defending Archimedes, you know, defending the genius of the future, that kind of thing. And, the reason was is because I, especially during the Levolution and been doing this for, God, 3 decades, I could see that I spend so much time trying to inform or fix people that got the wrong information. They went down the dark path. They didn't understand that they were being coerced or frauded or lied to or what. And if, you know, they woke up, oh, how do you wake them up? They woke up. I'm woken up. I go, what if they never went to sleep? What if you could inoculate them against BS? What if you could go, you know, look, you know, don't go down this road and you won't have these problems. Well, that's kind of what this pirate thing is about. And what you're doing and decentralization of everything. That, I believe, is going to be my effort and demonstration of trying to inoculate people of even going down these paths where they're controlled.
Absolutely. And I applaud all of that. I think that is so important. I mean, yeah, no doubt about it. Education solves everything. And so if we can create better facilitators of that education and create the tools and make people aware of the tools, man, I mean, yeah, it can be a pretty great future, in my opinion.
Right,
I'm
after,
always hopeful about the future. Well, I really am. Even though I get kind of downer about some of these technologies, I still think the future is going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, right after my show, you know, who was on? Brent Vinat. That school sucks. You know, I'm sitting there listening, I'm going, well, of course that's going to be in there. You know, decentralization of education. You know, I mean, you know, how am I not going to put that up? You know, decentralization of transportation, decentralization of information, of communication, being able to just have a signal. You know, decentralization of power, of water, of food, of media, journalism, open source, crowdsourcing of we just freaking know. You know, this there. I don't see the bad, they, them, those, they cannot compete with this, and I need Brian Sovereign's help to make sure that I'm not advocating the wrong tech that's sending them down the wrong avenue of what I'm very much against because I just don't know better.
I'm always here for you, Ernie. Don't you worry.
All right. Well, that's what I'm counting on you to help me with. This is, we're finishing up the art, and we're going to be starting to populate the categories, maybe even add a couple more categories. You know, Derek don't want 5 billion categories, but... you know, media, communication, food, shelter, water, transportation, money, you know, energy. I mean, you know, you might put, I think we would probably add healthcare in there, you know, some health things, some other stuff. But, you know, not a whole lot more than that. It's not going to be like Freedom's Phoenix. It'll feed from there. We got the API going in so that we can have, and you know, different categories and options, and I click boxes and it populates it. But if you look at ArizonaPirateParty.com, you'll see our mission statement is blank. I mean, it just has a bunch of gibberish in there. But I'm going, yeah, it better not be any longer than that. It's got to be a quick, we, you know, oppose the cult of the omnipotent state and individuals decentralized to kiss my ass government, you know, something, you know. So I'm just, you help me with that too. You got an idea. But this is coming, it's going to be the first week in January. I'm going to kind of, you know, let it out of the bag. And then January 20th, Inauguration Day, that Friday night, we're having a party here at Shea Ernie's, and it's going to be the 10-year anniversary of the first meetup for Ron Paul that started here. So that 10-year anniversary, we're like, all right, it's 10 years, on to the next thing. So we're going to have us a party. You know, the 21st was that midnight, and ding, Arizona Pirate Party, okay? So, I'm going to have me some freaking fun, man. If I'm not having fun, I was telling Ron Paul about it too. You know, I'm just going, look, man, I already see, but I need Brian Sovereign's help, because if I'm advocating for going down the dark side of whatever, even with Signal, I would tell him, I'm going, okay, this may, but I mean, the second I did it, all of a sudden, you know, my entire thing I'm getting text message out the ass now. Hey, welcome to the future. Oh, you're on Signal. I'm going, yeah. Does everybody know now that we're, you know, signaling? Yay.
Yeah. No, I understand. And yeah, I think, I mean, that's the thing though, is at least talking about it, asking those questions. I think that's great. You have a tremendous forum to be able to do it, and I'm glad you're doing it. And I am really excited to see what comes out of your stuff, Ernie. I mean, seriously. And God, I'm there for you. Don't worry.
God, I still got more. They're still, you know, kind of whatever. Oh yeah. Nick goes, super secret. Yeah. No, you guys killed me. All right. Well, I'm doing my best, and I'm glad you guys are there, and I'm going to keep you guys informed of all the stuff that we're doing and why. But it's, check this out. I got Davi working on some of the logos and pen and all this kind of stuff, Davi Barker, and he came up with this idea. It's like, here in Arizona, it's hot. Instead of wearing three-piece suits and jackets, and it's kind of, man, that's just stupid. You see somebody wearing a suit, and you're going, man, moron, it's 115 degrees. But the you could have, you know, pirate fluffy kind of shirts and so on, and a vest that maybe has, you know, some shoulders that goes out, and it has a little tactical stuff on it. And I got my bones I earned on my whatever. Be like a biker gang. Pirates, Arizona. You know? I want to have some fun.
I love it.
I want to have some fun. I want you guys to have fun. I might, you know, pimp it out and show it off at Pork Fest and do it. And I was going to go to a Narcopoca. I think I might send a couple of friends in my place, because I have a family thing that, you know, I'd be in my best interest to do. But I want to, you know, announce this at a Narcopoca. I mean, you know, hell, that'd be awesome, you know. So anyway, I'm working on it. Thanks for coming on. I did want to, that's one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to have you on, because when you were talking about WhatsApp and Signal and all that, I wanted to see just how, and I got a dose of, yeah, it's kind of secret.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, it's my pleasure, Ernie, as always.
All right, thanks, man. Peace.
Peace.